You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 3,800 workers for United Parcel Service in Canada went on strike yesterday. Represented by the Teamsters, the workers are protesting the newest contract offer from the U.S.-based package delivery service. The strike does not directly affect deliveries and shipping within the United States. In addition, the Independent Pilots Association has announced it will not cross any primary picket lines and issued a statement on Monday saying they will not fly into or out of Canada as long as the Teamsters are on strike. IPA represents close to 2,500 pilots who fly for UPS. The union has been in negotiations with UPS for 5 months.
The anti-choice federal refusal clause has passed without taking the issue to a full vote of the Senate. The provision allows the owners of HMOs, insurance companies, and for-profit hospitals the right to gag physicians from talking about abortions.
It also allows entities which receive federal funds to refuse to make referrals or to give women information on what their legal rights are. And it's called the non-discrimination bill, but it really discriminates against women.
Suzanne Martinez, Vice President for Public Policy for Planned Parenthood. She says this is a thinly veiled Republican attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade. The amendment contains no provisions for rape, incest, or the health of a woman seeking treatment. Robert Roos, President of Medical Students for Choice, says under the legislation, a hospital could theoretically bar him from treating a deathly ill woman, which he says is an unacceptable restriction.
As a future physician, it is important for me to be able to present all of the options to my patient.
Senator Boxer has demanded an April 1st vote on a bill that would repeal this provision.
Pizza delivery is consistently ranked amongst the most dangerous jobs in the country, and the drivers have begun demanding some respect. A pizza delivery drivers union, organized more than 2 years ago, has recently attracted the attention of the Teamsters. Last week, the pizza union had their first vote to organize a Domino's in Lincoln, Nebraska. Although the vote failed 2-2, organizers are calling the vote itself a triumph and are looking forward to a vote this week at a Pizza Hut in Columbus, Ohio. The union seeks to help drivers demand better fuel reimbursement, compensation for commercial drivers' insurance, and better training of drivers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to infant mortality and life expectancy, it definitely is not better living in the USA. Of the top 20 industrialized nations, the U.S. ranks 21st in infant mortality and 16th in average life expectancy. That's despite the fact that the U.S. spends 40% more per capita on health care than any other country on Earth. Of the top 10 industrial nations, Americans are the least satisfied with their health care system, while Canadians are the most satisfied, according to public polls.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
I've been chastised by Walmart. The largest corporation in the world apparently was stung by one of my recent commentaries. I'd pointed out that Walmart, which touts itself as a model of free market success, actually has built its market muscle in large part by milking us taxpayers, having squeezed more than $1 billion in subsidies from state and local governments, giving it a competitive advantage to clobber local businesses. In response, Sarah Clark, Director of Corporate Communications at Wally World, fired off a missive to media outlets that carried my Walmart commentary. She asserted that it was, quote, full of inaccuracies. Was the key figure of $1 billion in taxpayer giveaways to Walmart inaccurate? No, she did not dispute it. Rather, Walmart's chief PR flack tried to change the subject, offering numbers purporting to show that the company is a generous corporate citizen. In the past 10 years, Ms. Clark informs us, Walmart has paid $4 billion in property taxes alone. But wait, it owed those taxes. This was not a contribution, but a debt. Other businesses pay property taxes, too, yet they don't get $1 billion in special subsidies. Then Ms. Clark notes that her company, quote, generated $52 billion in sales taxes. But wait again, that's not Walmart's money. It's money that local consumers paid to finance public services. This money is also the result of sales that the monopolistic giant took from local businesses. Walmart doesn't expand a community's buying power. It just redistributes purchases from other stores to itself. But Ms. Clark presses on, claiming that Walmart has remitted $192 million in wage taxes. Once more, however, this money is not a voluntary contribution from a good-hearted company. It's taken out of the employees' wages, as required by law. This is Jim Hightower saying, to see the full report about how Walmart does indeed milk taxpayers, go to goodjobsfirst.org.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the holiday taste of Sam's Club. This weekend, Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, about 2 years I've been listening to that, and I just realized this. He's the man. Welcome. Here's the man. It's Tom Hartman here with you today, the 23rd of November, Tuesday. 21 days into the apparent new reign of corporate rule. You see this billboard down in Florida that is flying around the internet. It's got a picture of George Bush, and it simply says, "Our leader." My recollection from my German is that Der Führer, it translates literally into our leader. I may be wrong on that, but anyhow, it's controversy, yes. 523 days since Joe Wilson's wife has been outed, 751 days that we've been searching for weapons of mass destruction, 824 days since the anthrax killer. Have you heard anything about the anthrax killer lately? It's like, you know, the terrorists that we can use to scare people with get waved around a lot, but the terrorists we can't find or do anything about, or maybe, well, let's not go there. We don't talk about, apparently. 1,177 days since 9/11. Welcome to our program, my friends. Today, in our second hour of our program, we're going to get into our NLP and activism hour, neuro-linguistic programming. There are only two strategies in life, and we're always doing one or the other. Always! We'll discuss which is more effective and why activists continue to use the one that is least effective and what we can do about it. And what you can do about it. And you know, how this applies to your personal life, private life as well. In the third hour, is the government keeping track of you by the copy paper you buy at the office supply store? Stay tuned. And in our first hour, we're going to talk about a little bit about the commons. We own our democracy, and the best of the rest of the news, what carries up to in Ohio, all sorts of things. If you'd like to call into the program, the number 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to drop into our chat room, TomHartman.com will get you there. Just to let you know that Mike Toth has updated our archives. We just put them up this morning. And now in the PO, Psychological Operations section of the archives, the Tom Hartman Show archive. You go to TomHartman.com, click Listen to Archives, and click on the those, you know, it says, here's a collection of archives from the show. Go to Psychological Operations and last week's NLP class, the first one that we've started. This will be our second week. We're experimenting with this. Teach you something. We'll see, you know, how it works, what kind of response. I'm getting a lot of positive feedback and email from it. If you don't like, I'd like to hear about that also. So it's always useful to know whether you be a listener or a program director on one of our stations. You know, let me know what you think about the second hour today. I think it's fun and cool stuff. Time will tell if it makes good radio when I get into it, though. But you know, it's a great start. There's a principle in management. A lot of people who do management do this cattle prod management, catching people doing things wrong. And we started this a couple of years ago, actually. I caught you doing something right segment. And because it's really the most effective way to manage people, to acknowledge people. You want to motivate somebody, catch them doing something right instead of catching them doing something wrong. Even if they don't work for you, if they work with you or whatever, you know, even if it's your boss, if it's your kids, if it's your spouse, catch them doing something right. If there's something you want more of done, then point it out when they're doing something right, rather than just, you know, jumping on people when they do something wrong. So, our Caught You Doing Something Right for today, College Wants Top Students is the AP story. Here in, it's actually an AP story nationwide, but it's in the Vermont papers here because it's about a Vermont college. A small Vermont college with an environmental bent has announced a new program in which it will grant full scholarships to 10 students who have done extraordinary things. Now, get this. These are scholarships that have nothing to do with how good a student you are. Nothing whatsoever. They're not looking at academics. They're not looking at athletics. These are not scholarships for people who are great basketball or football players. Now, these are scholarships based on, quote, students who have made a difference through acts of heroism, community organizing, or other unusual efforts. As Green Mountain College President John Brennan said Monday, he said, these kids truly will be the leaders of tomorrow. Scholarship includes tuition, room, and board. They're looking for students who will, quote, act as role models for our other students to follow. So congratulations and good on you to the Green Mountain College. Also, I believe this is also known as, and the Pulteney School, Pulteney School. Congratulations to the Green Mountain College and the Pulteney School for doing something unique and something needed. It's great. Congratulations. Well done. Dr. Stephen Freeman has updated. He's been getting some criticism for this exit poll thing. He's updated it. His exit polls that show that the odds are 1 in 250 million that George Bush actually got the votes that the voting machines are telling us that he got. This is interesting. Some folks were attacking his methodology, saying, yeah, he had an error here, he had an error there. So he's done a new one. And he says the results are the same. Brand new research paper. In fact, interestingly, I was speaking this morning with Bev Harris's attorneys down in Florida. And, rather than get into the details of that, just that story is unfolding. And hopefully tomorrow we'll have some specifics for you. But just want to let you know, interesting things going on down there. And here we find this eerie parallel. Here in the United States, we had these states that experienced this significant what's called redshift. There was about 30 states in which there was a slight shift from, you know, 1 or 2 points all the way up to over 9 points from what the exit polls said people voted to what the machines said people voted in favor of George W. Bush. In the rest of the states, the exit polls and the actual results were accurate. And oddly, those states where the redshift occurred were the states that were, number one, swing states, critical swing states, and number two, states that were employing electronic voting technology, be it optical scan machines, reading the paper ballots, or be it touchscreen machines. A significant redshift. Now, keep in mind, exit polling even filters out the good old-fashioned voter suppression efforts, like Blackwell did in Ohio, where they would put only one, you know, just a couple of voting machines or voting booths into a minority neighborhood. So in one neighborhood, people had to literally stand in line for 22 hours to vote. And of course, a lot of people just can't do that. A lot of people can't. Their bladder won't allow them to do that. A lot of people just can't stand in line for 22 hours or 10 hours or 14 hours. As was typical in heavily Democratic areas, in minority areas, and student areas, those areas that would tend to vote toward John Kerry in the state of Ohio. But an exit poll actually filters that stuff out because they're not asking people who showed up, stood there for 3 hours, and then said, you know, I got to get back to work. I'm sorry. I'll see you guys later, even though I didn't vote. It's not asking those people. So it's not like a pre-poll. It's not even an entrance poll. It's actually an exit poll. So it's actually asking the people who voted. And now we find that the exit polls, the discrepancy between the exit polls and the actual vote tally has become a big deal to Senator Richard Lugar, the Republican from Indiana. However, the concern that he has is not about the exit polls discrepancy with the actual vote here in the United States. He's concerned about the Ukraine. In the Ukraine, they just had an election, and in two cities now, Kiev and Lviv, and Kiev is huge. I mean, this is a major city. I've not been in Lviv. I don't know, but I can't speak for that, but I'm assuming it's a pretty good-sized town. Based on this picture I'm looking at, 100,000 people showing up. People are a little concerned because the exit polls showed Yushchenko, who is kind of the Western-favored candidate. He's the pro-democracy kind of guy. Had about a six-point lead. But the actual machine count, or the actual count of the vote, however it was done, shows that he lost by about 3 points. 2.5, 3 points. 49.4 to 46.7. And so what has happened in the Ukraine? People have taken to the streets. I mean, they're major people taken to the streets. 100,000 Ukrainians in Kiev, the capital of the Ukraine, taken to the streets. And they're saying, and these two cities, these two major cities are saying, we're not accepting the outcome of this election. We're just not doing it. The Dutch foreign minister, Bernard Bot, said, we are very concerned about the news we've had about the outcome. He said all 25 EU member states would be calling in Ukrainian ambassadors to convey our message of serious concern. The fact that the exit polls and the actual results didn't line up. Bruce George, the head of the OSCE mission in Kiev, says the second round did not meet a considerable number of international commitments for democratic elections. The OSCE, which is the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, by the way, the OSCE also reported serious irregularities. Mr. George says the abuse of state resources in favor of the prime minister continued, as well as an overwhelming media bias in his favor. The group said Sunday's violations also included intimidation of observers and voters. So in the Ukraine, where in the stronghold areas where Yushchenko was going to get most of the votes, they had long lines. There was a policeman who was guarding the ballot boxes who was killed. People are all paranoid about that. And of course, the exit poll numbers didn't line up with the actual results. People are pretty flipped out about this. It's going to be interesting to see how, frankly, I mean, the report that I have here is a BBC report. I've not seen much about this in the American press, which is odd. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays over the next few days. And whether this leads to serious problems in the Ukraine. Because the guy who everybody is saying won is the guy who's aligned with Putin, with Russia. And, of course, the Ukraine used to be part of the Soviet Union. It used to be a satellite state of Russia. And they would pretty much just as soon it continued to be. And the guy who lost was the guy who was saying, you know, we need to be a little more independent of Putin, and in fact, we should look at maybe hooking up with the rest of the European Union. But the key to the whole thing is the difference between the exit polls and the result that was counted officially. Strange stuff. Tom Hartman here. You're in the real free speech zone.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
We're electing George Bush. He calls the lights are soft and pushy. We're electing George Bush.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind today?
Well, first of all, Tom, happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you, and the same to you. I'll be on the air, actually, on Thanksgiving and the day after.
So. Maybe something else to do besides watch the Macy's Parade, huh?
There you go.
Anyway, I was reading your story you did there in Common Dreams, I think it was?
Uh-huh.
On another website, and it sounded like maybe you might have been looking at that same website because I was reading about the Ukraine situation and what happened, I think, in Georgia when they pressured Shevardnadze to quit because there was a...
They got all this blowback, and then they reversed the election.
But now, here's the thing, Tom. I remember in 1996 when John Zogby was continually cited by Rush Limbaugh as being the most reliable pollster, and in fact, he was. He was putting Dole closer to Clinton than anybody else. In 2000...
He was, and he still is.
Right, and in 2000... Zogby was the only one on the day of the election to predict a popular vote victory for Gore, although he said 2%. And now this time around, Zogby is, I don't know if he's backing away, but he's definitely saying there's something wrong, you know, with these exit polls being at such variance with the actual. And, of course, I guess according to the thesis of your column there, it was basically the fact that these machines were hacked at some kind of a central unit, and you didn't really have to tamper with every single...
It could be. That was one possible mechanism. There's about a dozen different ways it could happen. That just happened to be the one that Howard Dean demonstrated on live TV. And then Diebold came back and said, or one of the voting machine companies came back and said, well, this is too complicated. This can't happen. And so Bev Harris, the folks at Black Box Voting, they did this on videotape. They set up one of these Diebold machines, and they got into the, you know, they opened it up to the central tabulator and then put a chimp in front of the keyboard, and the chimpanzee changed the vote. And all they had to do was train it to hit the enter key. And
sounds like he was a Republican op.
I don't know. It's some pretty smart Republican ops out there, so, you know, I wouldn't underestimate them.
But the funny thing is, you said about the rioting that was going on there in the streets in Ukraine, I guess even in the 1876 election, which was a pretty crooked one, too, as you know, there was some rioting going on, and federal troops had to put it down. But
here in the United States, yeah. Well, see, that was a lot of that came out of that split in 1872 in the Republican convention. The Republican Party had been, up until that point, by and large, the party of reform. And thought of itself as such. I mean, the Republican Party came into being in the late 1850s in Jackson, Michigan, although it, you know, it was a huge Midwestern phenomenon, but that's where it officially started, came into being as a response to the corruption that had engulfed the Democratic Party and, of course, the death of the Whigs. And so there was no loyal opposition. The Republican Party saw themselves as loyal opposition. In 1872, there was a group in the Republican Party who were trying to carry on the traditions of Lincoln as a reformer, and they put forth this platform of allowing unions and having women vote and having the Senate be directly elected by we the people rather than appointed by the states, and minimum wage laws and an inheritance tax. These were what were at that time considered to be progressive reforms. Ultimately became the Sherman Antitrust Act, a ban on corporate monopolies, something that Jefferson himself had pushed for to be written into the Constitution.
But it seems like the people nowadays, the population of the United States is so much bread and circuses, you know, they just don't really care. I mean, they don't care, it seems that it's...
Well, and people don't know their own history. I mean, that group that put forward that platform, that got crushed by the Republican Party in 1872, and so that group that did that split off, and they became two other kind of movements, the progressive movement and the populist movement, and that was the beginning of the end of the Republican Party as a reform party, and like you said, by 4 years later, in 1876, the Republicans were seen as the most corrupt party.
But I was referring more to the voter fraud that occurred in 1876, 2000, and now 2004.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, people just go on about their merry way, shopping for the holidays. And
well, there is some truth to the fact that there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, you know, voter fraud has a long history in the United States as well. But when it becomes systemic and it becomes national, I think that's when people get really spooked about it. Rick, thanks for the call. It's good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John Kerry in Ohio, interesting comment. We'll share with you right after the break. And then, you know, what's going on with this budget thing that just got passed yesterday? And how is it going to affect your pocketbook? Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 3,800 workers for United Parcel Service in Canada went on strike yesterday. Represented by the Teamsters, the workers are protesting the newest contract offer from the U.S.-based package delivery service. The strike does not directly affect deliveries and shipping within the United States. In addition, the Independent Pilots Association has announced it will not cross any primary picket lines and issued a statement on Monday saying they will not fly into or out of Canada as long as the Teamsters are on strike. IPA represents close to 2,500 pilots who fly for UPS. The union has been in negotiations with UPS for 5 months.
The anti-choice federal refusal clause has passed without taking the issue to a full vote of the Senate. The provision allows the owners of HMOs, insurance companies, and for-profit hospitals the right to gag physicians from talking about abortions.
It also allows entities which receive federal funds to refuse to make referrals or to give women information on what their legal rights are. And it's called the non-discrimination bill, but it really discriminates against women.
Suzanne Martinez, vice president for public policy for Planned Parenthood. She says this is a thinly veiled Republican attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade. The amendment contains no provisions for rape, incest, or the health of a woman seeking treatment. Robert Roos, president of Medical Students for Choice, says under the legislation, a hospital could theoretically bar him from treating a deathly ill woman, which he says is an unacceptable restriction.
As a future physician, it is important for me to be able to present all of the options to my patient.
Senator Boxer has demanded an April 1st vote on a bill that would repeal this provision.
Pizza delivery is consistently ranked amongst the most dangerous jobs in the country, and the drivers have begun demanding some respect. A pizza delivery drivers union organized more than 2 years ago has recently attracted the attention of the Teamsters. Last week, the pizza union had their first vote to organize a Domino's in Lincoln, Nebraska. Although the vote failed 2-2, organizers are calling the vote itself a triumph and are looking forward to a vote this week at a Pizza Hut in Columbus, Ohio. The union seeks to help drivers demand better fuel reimbursement, compensation for commercial drivers' insurance, and better training of drivers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to infant mortality and life expectancy, it definitely is not better living in the USA. Of the top 20 industrialized nations, the U.S. ranks 21st in infant mortality and 16th in average life expectancy. That's despite the fact that the U.S. spends 40% more per capita on health care than any other country on Earth. Of the top 10 industrial nations, Americans are the least satisfied with their health care system, while Canadians are the most satisfied, according to public polls.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We were born before the wind. Also younger than the sun. Yeah, the bonnie boat was won as we sail into the mystic.
And welcome back. I think, you know, one of the points that Rick was making in his call was they're out in the streets in the Ukraine, they're not out in the streets in the United States. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One, the difference was not between the exit polls and the actual results was not so conspicuous nationwide. It appeared on a state-by-state basis. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily create national outrage. Two, it wasn't that large. I mean, it was in some states. I mean, a 9% swing in New Hampshire, that got Ralph Nader's attention. But it wasn't the kind of huge, pervasive thing that they saw in the Ukraine. Three, Americans really want to believe that their system is just fine, thank you very much. I think the vast majority of Americans really don't even want to think about the possibility of voter fraud. Whereas the Ukraine is a brand new democracy. They've never had democracy before. I mean, literally, for thousands of years. And so they're still, you know, a little uncertain about things. They've watched a corrupt government, the Soviet Union, ruling over them, and then before that, corrupt czars and kings and whatnot. And they're a lot more suspicious, and rightfully so, frankly, of the power structure in their government than we are here in the United States, although there is, growing concern and suspicion here. And finally, I think that there's a large sense of, in the United States, so many Americans are either, number one, entertaining themselves to death, they just zoned out in front of the TV, which doesn't discuss these issues. The vast majority of our media, fewer than a dozen companies control about 90% of all the media people see in the United States now, see, hear, and read, number one. And number two, you've got people, because of 20 years of conservative economics, ever since Ronald Reagan declared war on organized labor, you've had much of the middle class, the American middle class, I would argue probably about half of the American middle class has been downshifted from being comfortable middle class to being the top end of the working poor. And people are working two and three jobs. You've got both members, both parents having to work now, whereas it used to be you could raise a family with just one, all that kind of thing. And so people just don't have the time. They're too busy dealing with survival issues. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs all over again. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Willie in Florida on the line. Hey, Willie, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I was listening to you, what you were talking about, the Ukraine and what's going on over there in the streets.
Yeah.
And I think a major part of why, it's not happening here, like you were saying, there are some reasons and they're very good. But the leadership, I mean, I guess I'm so disappointed in John Kerry as far as conceding as early as he did.
Yeah.
I think what it is that a lot of times politicians forget that, y'all don't pick us. We picked you.
Yeah.
And through the primaries, we picked him to be the leader of, liberals or Democrats or, just this certain group of people who wanted a new direction.
Mm-hmm.
He quit without really asking us, well, what do you guys want? Because y'all picked me to do this. I didn't pick y'all.
Yeah, Willie, I think the vast majority of listeners to this program absolutely agree with you. And what you've highlighted here is the fact that there are multiple constituencies within the Democratic Party. There's really a couple of different groups. And one group is like the old line kind of politicians, let's make a deal with the businesses, the whatever. And they're going to continue, they're going to go on to fight another battle kind of thing. And they're thinking of this strategically in terms of multi-year elections. And Kerry is one of those, I suspect. And he's saying, okay, we'll get out now, but we'll position ourselves in advance for 4 years from now. And then the other group within the Democratic Party are the people who, largely, I would say, folks like Howard Dean brought into the party, or
right.
You could say George W. Bush pushed into the party this past year, who helped John Kerry receive the largest number of votes outside of what George Bush got of any presidential candidate in the history of the United States.
And I'm one of them. I'm
yeah.
a first-time voter.
Yeah.
And so I came into this ready to fight to the death.
Well, me too. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm not a first-time voter, but I agree with you. I came into it ready to fight to the end, too. And Kerry clearly wasn't. And I think that was a huge misstep on his part. I think that I don't think that he had any idea of the depth of emotion and the intensity of passion and idealism, frankly, that was carried by so many of the people who maybe in previous years would have voted for Ralph Nader or even considered themselves,
right.
They weren't willing to even give the Democratic Party the time of day. And we took a shot on him this time, and we said, "Okay, you guys, we'll try you, we'll trust you." And I think Kerry's finally starting to realize that he blew it by
yes.
that concession.
And, he could have still been fighting.
Yeah, and so now you find that he's kind of he's putting his toe in the water to come back, and we'll see how this plays out. But people talking about Kerry's going to run again in 2008. That's right. It's going to be real tough for him because there's a lot of people who are just going to say, this guy walked away when we expected him to fight. We're not going to do that again.
I know. Hey, Tom, I appreciate your show, man. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you, Willie. I appreciate your calling. It's good. It's the It's the old, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Or, of course, as George W. Bush would say,
there's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, you can't get fooled again.
Yeah, fool me, you can't get fooled again. Close enough, you know, it's... So we have a sense of it anyway. And here we are. Here's this news story. A top-ranked official with Democratic Senator John Kerry's presidential campaign told the North County News, this from one of the newspapers in Ohio. I'm sorry, New York. Yorktown Heights, New York. Told the North County News last week that although unlikely, there is a recount effort being waged that could unseat Republican President George W. Bush. Now all of a sudden the Kerry campaign is talking about this. Kerry spokesman David Wade said, quote, we have 17,000 lawyers working on this, and the grassroots accountability couldn't be any higher. No irregularity will go unchecked, period. Ralph Nader, of course, is kind of saying, well, you know, it's should have done that from the beginning, John. It's and sort of taking credit for bringing Kerry into this. Nader said he's been calling on Kerry and his vice presidential running mate, Senator John Edwards of North Carolina, to, in his words, follow through on your post-election promise to the American people to make sure that every vote counts starting in Ohio. You realize, of course, that if Ohio is recounted and if the recount throws it to Kerry, Kerry is president. And you've got David Cobb and Michael Badnarik, the Green and Libertarian Party candidates, respectively, who have raised the money to make this thing happen. David Cobb actually raised $113,600 and filed, you know, the filing fee. He's still, you know, they still need the money to pay for the people to do the recount. And so they're still soliciting contributions over on www.votecobb.org. But anyhow, Cobb Media Director Blair Bobbier said the Ohio presidential election was marred by numerous press and independent reports of mismarked and discarded ballots, problems with the electronic voting machines, targeted disenfranchisement of African-American voters. In Mahoning County, 20 to 30 machines needed to be recalibrated during the voting process because some votes for one candidate were being counted for that candidate's opponent. This is sort of like in the 2002 election in Florida, where you push the button for Jeb Bush's opponent, and it registered as a vote for Jeb Bush. Mahoning County, about a dozen machines needed to be reset because they essentially froze. In Cincinnati, problems with punch card voting machines delayed the start of voting for up to an hour Tuesday morning. Voters were unable to slide their punch card ballots all the way in to any of the six voting machines that had evidently been damaged in transit. The way that people sabotage these voting machines, and this is an old story. I mean, this goes back 10, 12 years, when I was, it must be 12 years or so, when I was living down in the suburbs of Atlanta. And, you know, much of the voting then was being done on these punch card machines. And you slide that punch card down into a cardboard envelope sleeve until it hits the very bottom, and then you punch through the holes, right? And when it hits the bottom, that's like the calibration device. So the machine knows where the holes are. Well, all you have to do is just drop a paper clip down in there. And what it does is it causes the entire card to be a quarter inch off. So every hole that gets punched is the wrong hole. And, you know, it really screws up elections, and it's an old trick that they would do in districts where, you know, somebody, you know, they knew, hey, 70% of this district is going to go to candidate A. And we like candidate B, so we're going to sabotage the machines in this district. This is just, you know, an old problem with punch card ballot machines. And here we see this happening in Cincinnati. This resulted in lines of several hours, in one case 22 hours. Ralph Nader saying, we got a problem here. Francis in Eureka has some thoughts on this, I'm assuming, Francis. It doesn't... We don't screen our calls and ask people what's up, so I'm not sure. But
Oh, thank you. It's to your credit, Tom. Well, thank you.
Yeah, welcome to the program. I mean, you know, we do try to make sure people are not drunk or screaming. Occasionally, they are.
I'm not drunk or screaming. I just have Tourette's, so I make noises.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
Thank you.
So what's
I
up, Francis?
I just want to say that a few things. I definitely appreciate the NLP lessons on the air.
Thank you.
Yes, and I want to thank you very much for putting reading from the Martin Meyer when you're able to do it during the second hour.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten the book and haven't run into that section yet.
Yeah, it's a remarkable book. It's just an absolutely remarkable book.
Yeah.
You get this sense of how it can happen.
I wanted to tell you was that Der Führer means the leader.
Yeah.
Our leader would be Unser Führer.
Yeah, Unsere. Yeah, you're right.
Just, you know, salami, they said salami tactic.
Yeah.
Steps away.
Yeah. So, vielen Dank, Francis.
Gern geschehen. Und vielen Dank.
Ich bin sehr glücklich. Danke für
alles.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Francis. We'll talk to you again soon. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tony in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Tony.
How you doing? I want to be first to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and all of you have done, we are very thankful.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And
also,
happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Thank you, and also have a nice Christmas. Could you tell me now that we are now getting over that the debacle of November the 2nd. What is going to be Edward's next stand? Also, what will Nader play into the role?
You know, I don't know. This is a really interesting unfolding process. We're trying to get Ralph Nader on the program, actually. We've been told by his handler that he's willing to come on. I've assured him that I will not hang up on him or scream at him. It's not my style anyway. Apparently other people have done that, and he's not pleased. And you know, we're trying to find out how he views his role from now until, you know, the next election, and his thoughts on this. But, you know, in terms of what we need to be doing, progressives in the United States need to be doing, or liberals in the United States need to be doing, is we need to be waking people up. We need to be redefining the terms of the debate. We need to help people understand that those twisted words that the cons on the right-wing radio use to describe liberals and progressives are not accurate descriptions. You know, that we are the folks who brought about the liberal idea of Social Security, who brought about the liberal idea of police departments and fire departments actually paid for by we the voters, the liberal idea of public finance schools. And of course, there are still conservatives who say this is socialism. It's not, but nonetheless, that's their rant. You know, who brought about the liberal idea of having a government agency that would actually make sure that the drug supply was pure after thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in the 19th century died from phony patent medicines, created the FDA. Who brought about the liberal idea that we'd make sure that our food supply was pure after hundreds of thousands of people died from, you know, polluted food. And just, you know, redefining the discussion and the debate. I think it's really important.
What do you think about an aggressive campaign that Jesse Jackson Sr. was talking about of having an amendment along with they want to go ahead and all of a sudden put an amendment on having immigrants to run for president, put it down for absolutely having a constitutional amendment to elect your vote counts, and also a referendum to have it verified. And one more before we go. What do you think the Green Party part will be in this now that they gave the Democrat a chance? Now to my question off the air. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Tony. With regard to Jesse Jackson and the constitutional amendment, I think it's time for us to be raising some of these large issues. My favorite one is an amendment to the 14th Amendment that would put the word natural before the word person. So we'd say corporations aren't persons, only humans are. Corporations don't have human rights. And go back to the way that for 150 years the United States dealt with corporations. Or a constitutional amendment that says every vote should count, or that we can actually vote for the president of the United States. I agree with him on that. And I have to say, I think one of the brightest stars in the Democratic constellation right now is Jesse Jackson Jr. This guy is brilliant, number one. And number two, with regard to the Green Party, I think it's really important that progressives participate with both the Green Party and the Democratic Party at a local level. It's really very healthy, in my opinion, for our democracy to have a strong local Green Party programs. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be strong national ones as well. I do believe that we should continue to be infiltrating and working on the Democratic Party. I hope that Howard Dean takes it over, because I think it could bring about the renewal of the Democratic Party. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But it's the Greens who have been responsible for over 250 communities now in the United States having instant runoff voting, for example. and a lot of other very positive and progressive reforms. So, you know, we need to be doing more and more of that kind of thing. I'm just totally in favor of that. The big spending bill, you noticed a 1,690-page spending bill passed Congress yesterday, reflecting the priorities of the Republican administration. Pretty straightforward. They cranked up the money for Mars. That was a surprise for a lot of people, including a lot of Republicans. Cut money for the EPA. Cut money for education. Cut money for low-income housing. The biggest cuts, cut conservation programs, $142 million taken from the program to protect wetlands, $38 million reduction, pared by half a program to protect wildlife habitat. Good luck, hunters. Cutting the EPA, water quality programs. Welcome to Bush's America.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Tonight at 10, 9 Central on Bravo. Guess who's coming to dinner?
I'm very excited about this ingredient. Bourbon.
Yeah! It's the all-new Queer Eye for the Straight Guy Thanksgiving Special. The Fab Five track down their favorite straight guys.
Happy holiday.
To see who's still made over and who's a mess.
Oh, my God!
You guys freaked Carson out, which is not easy to do.
Oh, and it wouldn't be Thanksgiving without a little Fab Five football.
This will end in tears.
The all-new Queer Eye Thanksgiving Special tonight at 10, 9 Central, only on Bravo.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting the squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost a half a million workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
Since 1982, the Teamsters Pension Fund has been managed by Wall Street firms like Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan, companies who've shifted investments away from long-term bonds to stocks which generate fees. Similarly, President Bush and many Republicans want to shift Social Security investments away from a protected public trust into private savings accounts.
Once they privatize Social Security, we would have the return of massive old age poverty.
Again, Kenneth Kenpath.
We're not all going to become millionaires playing the stock market with an IRA, just as we won't all be rich if we bargain individually with corporations instead of having unions.
Kenpath says the union movement must unite under the threat of a corporate-styled Bush administration.
There is a general trend to privatize, individualize, to break down solidarity within our society. Solidarity in the labor movement doesn't just mean on the picket line. It means in our pension plans and our health plans, that we care about the retirees, that we care about each other, that the higher-paid workers have to fight for the lower-paid workers or they're going to become lower-paid workers.
For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And the sun was shining, and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds.
So here's this AP story by Alan Fram in yesterday's paper. This is, published nationwide. The opening paragraph, how bad is the government's deficit problem? The just-passed $388 billion bill financing almost every final federal agency in 2005 could be eliminated, and there would still be red ink. Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, the deficit is going to be, over $400, maybe over $500 billion this coming year. And $388 billion finances virtually everything except the military and the non-discretionary spending, Medicaid, Social Security, those kinds of things. So then this article goes on for three full pages, basically ranting about how we've got to get under control the spending in these other areas, these non-discretionary areas like Medicare, Medicaid, education, Social Security, blah, 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 blah. Never pointing out that you could wipe out that $388 billion debt, or deficit rather, or the $400, $500 billion deficit, overnight, just by, rolling back our tax rates to what they were, say, during Reagan. I mean, literally, just taking them back to, or just taking them back to what they were, in the Clinton years. We would have all that money. Number one, and number two, the entire Social Security trust fund, the entire Social Security program, could be fixed overnight if we simply stopped saying only the working poor and the middle of the middle class have to pay Social Security taxes and the rich don't have to pay Social Security taxes. If we just started to say rich people have to pay Social Security taxes too. You see, if you make over $87,000 a year, you don't have to pay Social Security tax on any of that money after $87,000. And if we simply said, there's no longer a cap. The Social Security tax is no longer something just to be paid for by the working poor and average working people. It's paid for by everybody. If you simply took that cap off it, the program would be fully funded forever. In fact, it would be running a huge surplus forever. As it is, the Social Security program, as it is, with no changes at all, is solid for somewhere between 25 and 35 years. But if you took that cap off, it would be running a wild surplus. But for some reason, this long AP story by Alan Fram, I'm suspecting that this is like one of those plants from one of the right-wing think tanks, never discusses taxation, never discusses the fact that Bush said, if you earn your money sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, you should only pay a 15% income tax rather than the over 30% everybody else pays if they work for a living. Why don't we just roll that back? Why don't we just change it? No, they don't even discuss it. Instead, they talk about cutting Medicare and cutting Social Security. Give me a break. Give me a break. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 3,800 workers for United Parcel Service in Canada went on strike yesterday. Represented by the Teamsters, the workers are protesting the newest contract offer from the U.S.-based package delivery service. The strike does not directly affect deliveries and shipping within the United States. In addition, the Independent Pilots Association has announced it will not cross any primary picket lines and issued a statement on Monday saying they will not fly into or out of Canada as long as the Teamsters are on strike. IPA represents close to 2,500 pilots who fly for UPS. The union has been in negotiations with UPS for 5 months.
The anti-choice federal refusal clause has passed without taking the issue to a full vote of the Senate. The provision allows the owners of HMOs, insurance companies, and for-profit hospitals the right to gag physicians from talking about abortions.
It also allows entities which receive federal funds to refuse to make referrals or to give women information on what their legal rights are. And it's called the non-discrimination bill, but it really discriminates against women.
Suzanne Martinez, Vice President for Public Policy for Planned Parenthood. She says this is a thinly veiled Republican attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade. The amendment contains no provisions for rape, incest, or the health of a woman seeking treatment. Robert Roos, President of Medical Students for Choice, says under the legislation, a hospital could theoretically bar him from treating a deathly ill woman, which he says is an unacceptable restriction.
As a future physician, it is important for me to be able to present all of the options to my patient.
Senator Boxer has demanded an April 1st vote on a bill that would repeal this provision.
Pizza delivery is consistently ranked amongst the most dangerous jobs in the country, and the drivers have begun demanding some respect. A pizza delivery drivers union, organized more than 2 years ago, has recently attracted the attention of the Teamsters. Last week, the pizza union had their first vote to organize a Domino's in Lincoln, Nebraska. Although the vote failed 2-2, organizers are calling the vote itself a triumph and are looking forward to a vote this week at a Pizza Hut in Columbus, Ohio. The union seeks to help drivers demand better fuel reimbursement, compensation for commercial drivers' insurance, and better training of drivers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to infant mortality and life expectancy, it definitely is not better living in the USA. Of the top 20 industrialized nations, the U.S. ranks 21st in infant mortality and 16th in average life expectancy. That's despite the fact that the U.S. spends 40% more per capita on health care than any other country on Earth. Of the top 10 industrial nations, Americans are the least satisfied with their health care system, while Canadians are the most satisfied according to public polls.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
John Kerry lost, right? Well, he says he did. He conceded to Bush only hours after the polls closed. But not everyone agrees, citing a plethora of voting glitches, discrepancies, and oddities in states like Ohio and Florida. Many democracy activists and Kerry backers say they're not convinced that the announced vote totals are correct, and they're not giving up as easily as Kerry did. Lest you think that these are merely people who wear tinfoil hats, they're not running around spouting conspiracy theories, but citing official election results that are, well, curious. One widely reported example was a suburban precinct outside Columbus, Ohio, that has 800 voters, but recorded 3,893 votes for Bush. Unreported, however, are many more such curiosities. In a town west of Cleveland, with about 13,000 voters, some 18,000 votes were cast. Also in suburban Cleveland, 29 precincts reported 93,000 more votes than they had voters. Then there's the strange action by election officials in Warren County, outside of Cincinnati. They locked down the building where the votes were counted, preventing reporters or other citizens from watching the count. They claim that the FBI and Homeland Security agents had warned them that they were under Code Red terrorist alert, thus justifying the extreme secrecy measures on Election Day. In Florida, 29 rural counties with huge Democratic majorities inexplicably reported lopsided victories for Bush. Also in Broward County, when poll workers complained to the election supervisor that boxes full of uncounted absentee ballots were still sitting in storage, they were abruptly escorted out of the building. This is Jim Hightower saying, six prominent members of Congress have called for a nonpartisan investigation into these and other documentable voting problems. Kerry might have lost, but for the public to have faith in our voting system, we ought to know that for a fact.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, archives at whiterosesociety.org and tomhartman.com. It's the second hour of our Tuesday program. We're going to continue with this experiment of an online or an on-air course in neurolinguistic programming for activists. Put it using a tool that is traditionally a therapeutic tool, although it has it's widely applied actually in the business world as a sales and marketing tool, and that has been very effectively used largely since the Elder Bush campaign, the Bush Dukakis campaign, by the Republican Party, as championed by folks like Frank Luntz, using this tool, teaching this tool to progressives, Democrats, liberals, and any conservatives who may happen to be listening. So last week we talked about visual auditory kinesthetic, you know, what motivates people, that is how to reach in to a person and to use a kinesthetic metaphor and touch them with a message. how to step into another person's world. This week I want to talk about primary motivation strategies.
Now, this sounds very didactic. What is a primary motivation strategy?
Well, it's really simple. It's really very simple. We never stand still, none of us. We are always doing one of two things, and only one of those two things. We are all, always, every moment, either moving toward something we want, moving toward pleasure, or moving away from something we don't want or we're afraid of or we want to avoid. We're moving away from pain. So we're always either moving toward pleasure or moving away from pain. These are the basic strategies that govern literally every moment of our lives. And people make decisions based on these strategies. And there's this whole science, frankly, of decision making and how these specific strategies are brought to bear on it. But first, let's understand what they are, because this understanding this is the key to understand what motivates people. And when you understand how people motivate themselves internally, then you can have a little more of an opportunity to influence externally the direction they may want to move in the future. To put this in a political context, there are generally two types of political figures and political themes. The first is to move toward a positive vision of the future. This is moving toward pleasure. This is Jack Kennedy. You know, our best days are still to come. Ronald Reagan, the shining America is the shining city on the hill. Paraphrasing, as I recall, George Bernard Shaw. And then there are the second, that's the first political strategy, to hold up an ideal. This is what Roosevelt did so brilliantly. He became president during the Great Depression, and everybody was terrified of the future. And he said, literally, you have nothing to fear. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. And let's move to a positive vision of the future. His four wants speech and all these things, you know. And he started holding up ideals, positive visions, things to move toward. Franklin Roosevelt was very much a moving toward pleasure guy. And it's one of the reasons he was such a brilliant leader. Abraham Lincoln, same thing. He was talking about holding the Union together. And it wasn't an anti-response. It was a proactive vision that he held. Jefferson, the same. I'd say George Washington, the same. Some of our greatest presidents held these very positive visions or were proponents of them. The second way that politicians motivate us is to say that they will protect us from some fear, either in the present or the future. In other words, they will help us move away from pain. So these are the two great political techniques to hold a vision of, you know, a positive vision, say, let's move collectively toward pleasure, or let's collectively move away from pain. Truly effective political campaigns always incorporate both strategies, by the way. And this is true of any kind of motivation strategy. Consider America's founders, who were steadily moving us away from the pain of British occupation and economic oppression by the East India Company, while simultaneously moving us toward this grand egalitarian experiment in self-government, grounded in the dreams and ideals of the Enlightenment, in the high quality of community that they saw among the Native Americans. They said, you know, we can have this. We can do this. We can create a nation where we actually govern ourselves. Yes, it's only been done once before by the Greeks, and it didn't last very long. We can do it, though, and we can do it in a way that will last. We've seen the inklings of it in the Greek experiment. We've seen the possibility of it in the Iroquois nation. We can do it here in North America. And the whole world looked on and said, come on, they're crazy. But they held such a strong, powerful, positive vision that even though at the beginning of the American Revolution, only about a third of Americans supported the revolution, by, you know, a year or so into it, everybody was on board. Well, large, not everybody. Many, many more people were on board. When you consider these two types of strategies, moving toward pleasure, moving away from pain, it's useful to think of them as if they were two of the four basic forces of nature. You know, in nature, the entire universe is held together by four forces. There's the strong and weak nuclear force, which you can never see. This is like, these are the forces inside an atom. And then there are the two more visible forces. The you know, Newton talked about gravity. Gravity is one of them. And Ben Franklin first really enlightened us about electromagnetism, the other one, with his kite experiment with lightning. And if you think of electromagnetism, lightning, electric shocks, as the moving away from pain strategy, and you think of gravity as the moving toward pleasure strategy, it's really a good analogy. These are great metaphors to use to understand these. Here's why. Moving away from pain strategies produce immediate, powerful, rapid results. If you can scare somebody enough, you will get them to change their behavior very quickly. Just like if you get an electric shock, you let go of that outlet or that, you know, you pull your finger out of the wall socket. If lightning strikes near you, you get out of the way. Moving away from pain strategies produce an immediate, whoa, you know, got to do something. That's the kind of upside of them. That's the benefit of them. The downside of moving away from pain strategies, these electricity strategies, is that over time, they exhaust people. They numb people. And they actually wound people. It's like whipping a horse to keep it going. At first, it works really well, but after a while, it becomes less effective. And if you keep doing it over and over and over, harder and harder and harder, eventually that horse will drop dead of exhaustion. Or it'll give up and stop trying to avoid the pain and just sit there and whimper when you whip it. In either case, you can see that there's an absolute limit to the moving away from pain strategies, how far you can push them. So they're useful in the beginning, or they're powerful in the beginning. But over time, they lose their power, they become ineffective, and they can actually damage and wound. Moving toward pleasure strategies are more like the natural force of gravity. Just like gravity is the weakest of the natural forces, it's also the most steady and constant. It's keeping you and me right now glued to our seats or our feet on the floor. It steadily acts through our lives. It never varies. It's just always there. Although moving toward pleasure strategies don't usually produce immediate shocking stimulation or immediate changes in behavior like moving away from pain strategies do, they can last over the long haul, and they can motivate a person throughout their entire lives. If you can help install a positive moving toward pleasure strategy in others or in yourself. You know, consider how the moving toward pleasure story of a free society, this vision, this story, this hope, to talk about it visually, auditory, and kinesthetically, of the founders continues to inspire us even two centuries after these guys are all dead. And we're still being inspired by it. It's like gravity. On the personal level, we all use these strategies in our daily life. And when I teach workshops on this stuff, one of the common things that I'll do is I'll look out in the class and I'll say, who has trouble getting up in the morning, waking up in the morning, getting out of bed? And, you know, and then I'll, you know, we'll ask a few questions and figure out who in the classroom has the most trouble. And who has the easiest time getting out of bed? Who, you know, and for example, the last class that I taught on this was just a few months ago at Omega Institute in New York. And there was a guy in the class who had three alarm clocks. Each one had three snooze buttons, or, you know, had a snooze button that had three cycles in it. So he had nine cycles, and he set these three alarm clocks 15 minutes apart. So he'd go through nine pushing the snooze buttons before he finally got himself out of bed. And, you know, I asked him, what goes through your mind in the morning when you're pushing that, you know, when you're hearing that buzzer and you're reaching over to push that button? And he told me this story about visualizing himself showing up late for work. Now, this is a moving away from pain strategy. Visualizing himself showing up late for work, his boss firing him. Then he sees himself standing in the unemployment line. Then he sees and feeling humiliated. Then he sees himself, his unemployment running out and being evicted from his apartment. Then he sees himself living under a bridge and being, you know, beaten up and robbed by people who want the last little bit of money or clothes that he's got. This, he runs this picture through his mind, and that propels him out of bed so that he won't be fired, right? It's a moving away, it's a fear-based strategy. And it's probably one he learned as a little kid. Probably, you know, his mom came in and said, if you don't go to school, they're going to come and arrest you, or something like that. You know, enough times that he internalized that strategy. Then you look around the room and say, who has no problem getting up at all? And I remember in this last class, there was a woman who said that she always wakes up five to 15 minutes before her alarm would go off. And I said, what do you think about? And she said, well, before I go to sleep at night, I think about, you know, the people I'm going to see the next day and what I'm going to do and all this. And the interesting conversations I'm going to have, the relationships I'm going to have. And she was really motivated by this. She'd wake up in the morning thinking about this. Here's the real irony. When I asked this guy what he did for a living and I asked this woman what she did for a living, they were very similar jobs. They both worked in offices. They both had complaints about their jobs. They both had things they liked about their jobs. Very similar situations. But one was using fear and dread to get him, and he had started out with just one alarm clock with one snooze button, and over time he had to go all the way up to three, and the other one was having no problem getting up because she was using a moving toward pleasure strategy. This is just an example of how they work. Now, how do we apply these things to politics? How do you apply this to creating a persuasive political message? How do you use this information to help influence people? I mean, this is why we talk to people, right? Try to influence them in a positive way. We'll get into that when we get right back. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Yeah, see, there's that positive attitude. Son of One in the chat room says, I can see that a boss who has a positive attitude would help with my waking and work attitude. And absolutely true. However, you can install it in yourself. Here's just to wrap that story up, is the interesting thing. This guy who had all this problem with all these alarm clocks, the class ran over it was a week-long class, this class that I was teaching at Omega. And so I said, tonight, before you go to sleep, think about what's going to happen tomorrow that's going to be positive and that you're going to enjoy, that you're looking forward to. And ask yourself a question, ask your unconscious mind to give you an answer when you wake up in the morning about something that you might ask or something you might say or something you might do tomorrow that would be interesting, that would be fun. And the next morning, this guy comes in to class, and he's just, like, amazed. He says, I woke up 5 minutes before my, you know, actually, he said he woke up right at the moment when the alarm would have gone off, just as it was about to go off. He just, because we all have the ability to do that. We have this incredibly powerful unconscious mind. I learned when I was a little kid, I could just imagine an alarm clock in my head, and before I fall asleep, set the hours, set the alarm, push the button in my head, and I would wake up automatically in the morning at that time to the minute. And I'm not special in this regard. I mean, I know many people who do. Anybody, I'm convinced, anybody can do this. But anyhow, so he just employed a new strategy. He just tried a moving toward pleasure strategy to wake himself up in the morning, and it worked. And, of course, once you try a new strategy and it works, you can just intentionally build it into your life. Another dimension of this has to do with goal setting, because really that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about personal goal setting or national goal setting in a political context. And this is, again, where I think that the Democrats failed in this last election. You know, regardless of the election outcome and how it shakes out and all that other stuff, you know, and all those arguments, this is nonetheless where the Democrats failed. And it's where the Democrats have been failing for some time, frankly, in my opinion, is, and the Greens have been succeeding, by the way, is in holding specific positive goals. Here is our vision for the future. This is what Newt Gingrich did so brilliantly, even though it was so corrupt. It was over the weekend, I went back and I read his Contract with America, and it pointed to specific legislation. And you go back and you read the legislation, and basically three of his 10 points in his Contract with America were tax cuts for the rich. I mean, that's what most of it boiled down to. But nonetheless, actually, there was some good stuff in there, like, you know, let's cut back on congressional staff and things. Although now we're seeing that the problem with that is that Congress people don't have the time to even read bills that they have to vote on. So, you know, it's a Newt's, but, you know, but I digress. The point is that Newt put forward what was perceived as a positive vision, even though in my opinion it wasn't. It was largely a negative vision. But it was perceived and it was marketed as a positive vision. And you must, in politics, put this forth. Now, the neat thing about goals, and this is where most individuals with individual personal goal setting, be it professional or personal, you know, in your personal life, in your love life, in your relationships, in your family, in your business work. A lot of people have this idea that if you set a goal, you must reach it, and that if they fail to reach it, they punish themselves. And so as a result of this, a lot of people end up being afraid to set goals. I wonder if this kind of post-traumatic stress disorder has infected the Democratic Party. You know, I'm not sure. I don't want to try and psychoanalyze an entire party. But the bottom line is that you don't need to reach your goals. You just need to have them. We all must all the time have a positive goal. There has to be that gravity, that sunlight that we're moving toward, that positive force that we're moving toward. Without that, life becomes less meaningful. And so any politician who wants to offer themselves as a leader must have something to lead toward. And just very straightforward stuff. So number one, give yourself permission not to reach your goals, because you can continually recalibrate them. You can say, okay, this is my goal today, and 2 weeks from now I might change it. But at least I have a goal. I know it, you know, but as I get more information, I may learn that, hey, I really should be doing this plus something else, or this minus something else. This is called learning, by the way. It's called learning. Right after the break, I'll just give you the NLP presupposition that this is based on. Wrap this thing up and take your calls if you'd like, if you have any questions or observations on this. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight at 10, 9 Central on Bravo. Guess who's coming to dinner?
I'm very excited about this ingredient. Bourbon.
Yeah! It's the all-new Queer Eye for the Straight Guy Thanksgiving Special. The Fab Five track down their favorite straight guys.
Happy holidays.
To see who's still made over and who's a mess.
Oh, my God.
You guys freaked Carson out, which is not easy to do.
Oh, and it wouldn't be Thanksgiving without a little Fab Five football.
This will end in tears.
The all-new Queer Eye Thanksgiving Special tonight at 10, 9 Central, only on Bravo.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 3,800 workers for United Parcel Servicing Canada went on strike yesterday. Represented by the Teamsters, the workers are protesting the newest contract offer from the U.S.-based package delivery service. The strike does not directly affect deliveries and shipping within the United States. In addition, the Independent Pilots Association has announced it will not cross any primary picket lines and issued a statement on Monday saying they will not fly into or out of Canada as long as the Teamsters are on strike. IPA represents close to 2,500 pilots who fly for UPS. The union has been in negotiations with UPS for 5 months.
The anti-choice federal refusal clause has passed without taking the issue to a full vote of the Senate. The provision allows the owners of HMOs, insurance companies, and for-profit hospitals the right to gag physicians from talking about abortions.
It also allows entities which receive federal funds to refuse to make referrals or to give women information on what their legal rights are. And it's called the non-discrimination bill, but it really discriminates against women.
Suzanne Martinez, Vice President for Public Policy for Planned Parenthood. She says this is a thinly veiled Republican attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade. The amendment contains no provisions for rape, incest, or the health of a woman seeking treatment. Robert Roos, President of Medical Students for Choice, says under the legislation, a hospital could theoretically bar him from treating a deathly ill woman, which he says is an unacceptable restriction.
As a future physician, it is important for me to be able to present all of the options to my patient.
Senator Boxer has demanded an April 1st vote on a bill that would repeal this provision.
Pizza delivery is consistently ranked amongst the most dangerous jobs in the country, and the drivers have begun demanding some respect. A pizza delivery drivers union, organized more than 2 years ago, has recently attracted the attention of the Teamsters. Last week, the pizza union had their first vote to organize a Domino's in Lincoln, Nebraska. Although the vote failed 2-2, organizers are calling the vote itself a triumph and are looking forward to a vote this week at a Pizza Hut in Columbus, Ohio. The union seeks to help drivers demand better fuel reimbursement, compensation for commercial drivers' insurance, and better training of drivers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to infant mortality and life expectancy, it definitely is not better living in the USA. Of the top 20 industrialized nations, the U.S. ranks 21st in infant mortality and 16th in average life expectancy. That's despite the fact that the U.S. spends 40% more per capita on health care than any other country on Earth. Of the top 10 industrial nations, Americans are the least satisfied with their health care system, while Canadians are the most satisfied, according to public polls.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
How many times must a man look up before he can see the the sky.
And welcome back. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you have questions, thoughts, observations, particularly on this topic, we're going to wrap this up in just a few minutes and then move back into the best of the rest of the news with this hour. But I want to nail this down, make it absolutely clear, tell you the story so that you've got it and you understand it. The presupposition, the neurolinguistic programming presupposition that all of this stuff is grounded on, is that there is no failure, only feedback. There are no mistakes, only outcomes. This is one of those sayings that's worthy of writing out on a piece of paper and putting on your refrigerator with a magnet, you know, sticking it on the mirror in your bathroom until you have it memorized. There is no failure, only feedback. That is to say, everything that happens, we can learn something from that will help us to do better next time. There is no failure, only feedback. Thomas Edison, 10,000 tries to make an electric light bulb. There is no failure, only feedback. There are no mistakes, there are only outcomes. Oh, I made a mistake. No, you only made a mistake if you failed to learn from it. And we're all capable of learning. In fact, it's almost impossible not to learn. Therefore, there are no mistakes. There are only outcomes. It might not be the outcome you want, but it's the outcome. And because you learn from it, in the future, you can change that. So what this and the other point that is really important to keep track of is that when you're experiencing anxiety, that's an indication that you are involving yourself in a moving away from pain motivation strategy, that internally you've got some sort of dialogue or you're seeing pictures or whatever of something scary that you're trying to move away from, and that produces the anxiety. And you can replace that. Once you become aware of your internal motivation strategies, of your internal dialogue, of the internal pictures that you're using to propel yourself forward or to away from things, you can recalibrate them. You can change them. When moving away from pain strategies are used repeatedly and for the same thing, over time they wear away at us. They diminish our enthusiasm, and they often even lead to depression or apathy. This is the secret known to political strategists. They know that negative advertising, one political form of moving away from pain, rarely produces any new votes for their candidate. People won't vote for candidate A just because you've convinced them that candidate B is a bum. Doesn't happen. Instead, they usually become the voting equivalent of depressed. They disengage from the political process and just don't show up at the polls. Negative campaigning is a form of voter suppression. It almost always drives down the number of people who show up at the polls. Interesting thing to know. Another political form of moving away from pain is the "I'll save you from danger" pitch. For this to work, politicians must first convince us that there's a real and terrible danger that threatens us personally and cause us to irrationally obsess on it. Consider the terrorist strike of 9/11. 3,000 people died. Now, you know, they're saying, well, you know, they could set off a dirty bomb or a bomb in Chicago. If they set off a nuke in Chicago, it would kill 500,000 people. Yeah, okay, 500,000 people. You know how many people are going to die this year from cancer? 560,000, over 500,000, just in the United States. What's the real threat? And yet, the last politician to talk about a war on cancer was Richard Nixon in 1971. Now, why would that be? Well, here's my cynical answer. Cancer's profitable. The companies that spray cancer-causing things on our food supply, inject it into our environment, they make a profit doing it. And the way that our healthcare system is set up right now, unlike every other advanced democracy in the world, whenever anybody is diagnosed with cancer, a whole bunch of people make money. A cancer diagnosis is worth about $250,000 to the medical industry. In many cases, as much as $500,000. Politicians throwing out the big scare, as they did with the threat of communism in the 50s, is an old trick. Conservatives tried doing this with Bill Clinton's sex life in the 90s and saying that this is a dire threat of moral decay in America. If you can hold up something to fear, be it communists, nukes, gays, hippies, terrorists, or even promoting anti-Semitism as Hitler did with Jews and as Bush's General Boykin does with Arabs, over the short term, you can provoke a few people to show up at the polls because of their fear. Sure, you know, you poke people with a stick, you'll get an immediate response. But over the long term, you exhaust most of the people so much that they won't even challenge you anymore, and they won't participate in politics. And that, of course, is the goal of demagogues, which ain't us, hopefully. But it is important to recognize. That's why it's so important that we have a positive vision to offer America. A vision of a safe and secure America where people don't need to fear disease because everybody has health care and our regulatory agencies are keeping carcinogens out of our food and our environment. A vision of schools that work well for our children, not just testing and threatening them, moving away from pain strategy, but working with and for them. And a vision of every child who wants to attend college being able to. I think I told you in the last hour that the new budget that was passed yesterday by the president is going to cut by about 100,000 the number of students who will get Pell Grants this year. The main college funding for most low, middle and low-income folks, kids. We need to hold up a vision of a society that cares for its least fortunate, modeling itself on the teachings of Tikkun in Judaism, Jesus' words in Christianity, similar teachings of compassion in Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and humanism. A vision of a working middle class that is paid a living wage and can, if they just play by the rules, raise and educate their children, have health security, and know that their retirement in old age is assured, is safe. A vision of a nation where dissent is not only tolerated but celebrated. Because it's dissent that helps us correct problems within our body politic. A vision of a nation where anybody can start a business if they want, where local communities can preserve their own unique local character, and massive corporate predators are broken up and under control. And, like we talked about last week, not just a vision, but a story, and a steady, consistent sense of what life in such a beautiful, positive world could be like. So, that's our NLP lesson for the day. There's no failure, only feedback. No mistakes, only outcomes. Understanding that there are motivation strategies that we all use and that they are embedded in every political message, and understanding that if you want to have a truly effective political message, it's appropriate in many cases, to have a small amount of moving away from pain. Hey, we really want to stop the unemployment problem. This is not good. We have people who are in soup kitchens and bread lines. Okay. And have an overarching positive vision to solve that problem. And the way we're going to solve this problem is with a comprehensive program in the United States for the United States government to say, to business, if you want to play the game of business in the United States, you have to play it by rules that will allow us to have a middle class. In other words, the minimum wage is now, you know, whatever we decide, but it's no longer $5.15. And you have to allow people to form unions. And we're going to provide for health care for everybody, or you know, whatever it may be, wherever you want to go with that. So, our lesson for the day. Dear President Bush, I shared this with you. The first time this was circulating was almost a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I think, on this program. I read this on the air, and it's flying around the Internet again. For those of you who aren't, web junkies, this is a great example of how sometimes the absurdity of phony moving away from pain strategies can be used. Are not necessarily phony, just kind of preying on people's fears, right? And this is a humorous way of highlighting it. This letter, Dear President Bush, congratulations on your electoral victory and for doing so much to educate people regarding God's law. I've learned a great deal from you and understand why you would propose and support a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. As you said, quote, in the eyes of God, marriage is based between a man and a woman, end quote. Yes, George Bush actually said that. He knows what is in God's eyes. He said, I try to share that, and then the writer of this letter says, I try to share that knowledge with as many people as I can. When someone tries to defend the homosexual lifestyle, for example, I simply remind them that in Leviticus 18:22, it clearly states that homosexuality is an abomination. End of debate. However, continuing to read Leviticus does raise a few questions. I need some advice from you regarding some of the other elements of God's laws in Leviticus and how best to follow them. For example, Leviticus 25:44 says that I may possess slaves, both male and female, provided they are purchased from neighboring nations. Now, a friend of mine claims that this applies to Mexicans, but not Canadians. Can you clarify? Why can't I own Canadians? Number two, in Exodus 21:7, it says that I can sell my daughter into slavery, and I'd like to consider that. In this day and age, what do you think would be a fair price? Number three, I know that I am allowed no contact with a woman while she is in her period of uncleanliness, Leviticus 15:19 through 24. The problem is, how do I tell? I tried asking, but most women take offense. Number four, when I burn a bull on the altar as a sacrifice, I know it creates a pleasing odor for the Lord, as it says in Leviticus 1:9. The problem is my neighbors. They claim the odor is not pleasing to them. Should I smite them? Number five, I have a neighbor who insists on working on the Sabbath. Now, Exodus 35:2 clearly states that he must be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself, or should I ask the police to do it for me? Number six, a friend of mine feels that even though eating shellfish is an abomination, after all, it says so in Leviticus 11:10, he says that it's a lesser abomination than homosexuality. I don't agree. Can you settle this? Are there degrees of abomination? Number seven, Leviticus 21:20 states that I may not approach the altar of God if I have a defect in my sight. I have to admit that I wear reading glasses. Does my vision have to be 20/20, or is there some wiggle room here? Number eight, most of my male friends get their hair trimmed, including the hair around their temples, even though this is expressly forbidden by Leviticus 19:27. How should they die? Number nine, I know from reading Leviticus 11:6 through 8 that touching the skin of a dead pig makes me unclean, but may I still play football if I wear gloves? Number 10, my uncle has a farm. He violates Leviticus 19:19 by planting two different crops in the same field, as does my wife by wearing garments made of two different threads of kinds of thread, cotton and polyester blend. He also tends to curse and blaspheme a lot. Is it really necessary that we go to all the trouble of getting the whole town together to stone him to death? Leviticus, as suggested, Leviticus 24:10 through 6, can't we just burn them to death at a private family affair like we can do with people who sleep with their in-laws, as it says in Leviticus 20:14? I know that you, President Bush, have studied these things extensively and thus enjoy considerable expertise in such matters, so I'm confident you can help. Thanks again for reminding us that God's word is eternal and unchanging. I won't share the signature with you. Now, that seems a little silly. Here we have Terry Leo, a member of the State Board of Education in East Texas, representing 2.5 million people. Outside the Spring Church of Christ, a large roadside sign says, "Support New Testament Morality." Now, when I read that first opening paragraph of the story, and I thought, great, New Testament morality. Somebody's going to be talking about Matthew 24. You know, the only place in the entire Bible where Jesus, his disciples come to him and say, what do we have to do to get into heaven? And he says, here's what you got to do. And people who don't do this won't be there. And he says, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, house the homeless, visit those in prison. He just lays it right out. It's right there, Matthew 24. You can go read it yourself. Apparently, though, the people in East Texas, that's not what they meant when they said support New Testament morality. They have, Terry Leo and her friends on the State Board of Education, have gone through the textbooks and deleted words that they say are stealth references to gay relationships. Like the word partner, for example, was changed to husbands and wives. A passage explaining that adolescence brings on the onset of, quote, attraction to others, end quote, became attraction to the opposite sex. Texas, which is noted in this let's see, who published this story? This L.A. Times story by Scott Gold of the L.A. Times. He says, Texas is the second largest buyer of textbooks in the nation after California. Books purchased here wind up in classrooms across the nation because publishers are loath to create new editions for smaller states. As a result, five social conservatives on the 15-member Texas board, frequently joined by five more moderate Republicans, have enormous clout and often control the content used to teach millions of children. Publishers have no choice but to heed the group's wishes, says Don McLeroy, a dentist, Sunday school teacher, and Texas Board of Education member. They got to sell books, he said. It's business. Conservatives' effort over the years to edit textbooks are legendary here in Texas. In a nod to those who believe God created the earth 6,000 years ago, a sentence saying the ice age took place millions of years ago was changed to, quote, in the distant past. Descriptions of environmentalism have been attacked as antithetical to free enterprise. A passage describing the cruelty of slavery was derided as overkill and thus removed. The pace of such efforts to alter curriculum is expected to increase, notes this article, because Christian conservatives are emboldened by the Republican gains on Election Day. And yet, we find here this story actually from the Times Argus, the Montpelier, Vermont newspaper, although BuzzFlash has put it in national circulation. Looking at the Nielsen ratings, talking to the president of ABC Entertainment, turns out that the red states are as fond of violent and sexual TV programming as the blue states. There's just no difference. Desperate Housewives, top-rated show in Atlanta, 58% of the vote went to Bush. Salt Lake City, 72% for Bush. Desperate Housewives, right up there at the top, number four. We're really more alike than we are different.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting the squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost a half a million workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
Since 1982, the Teamsters Pension Fund has been managed by Wall Street firms like Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan, companies who've shifted investments away from long-term bonds to stocks which generate fees. Similarly, President Bush and many Republicans want to shift Social Security investments away from a protected public trust into private savings accounts.
Once they privatize Social Security, we would have the return of massive old age poverty.
Again, Kenneth Kenpath.
We're not all going to become millionaires playing the stock market with an IRA, just as we won't all be rich if we bargain individually with corporations instead of having unions.
Kenpath says the union movement must unite under the threat of a corporate-styled Bush administration.
There is a general trend to privatize, individualize, to break down solidarity within our society. Solidarity in the labor movement doesn't just mean on the picket line. It means in our pension plans and our health plans that we care about the retirees, that we care about each other, that the higher paid workers have to fight for the lower paid workers or they're going to become lower paid workers.
For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I see trees of green, red roses too.
Oh, me too.
I see them blue for me and you.
See, here's a Moving Toward Pleasures song. Welcome back, my friends. George W. Bush ran on the campaign platform, basically, of moving away from pain. Dick Cheney threatening us, telling us that our major cities were vulnerable to nuclear attack and quack, quack, quack. And the core message was that we should be afraid and that he could protect us. And as I said, you know, moving away from pain strategy can be very effective over the short term. It's the story of the little boy who cried wolf. You know, it's effective over the short term. Over the long term, it burns out. People become exhausted by it. And the people who really know what's going on see through it. As was pointed out by Kevin Johnson in USA Today last week, police scoff at Ashcroft's speech, this article. A day after Attorney General John Ashcroft, Johnson writes, told the nation's largest association of law enforcement executives that the Bush administration had made the nation more secure from terrorist attacks and violent criminals, the group lashed back at the White House. This is the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Folks that you know, I think we should be listening to, don't you? They said that cuts by the administration in federal aid to local police agencies had left the nation more vulnerable than ever to public safety threats. See, they've got their own moving away from pain story to go. The 20,000-member group also said in a statement that new anti-terrorism duties for local cops, which have come as state and local budgets, have declined, and historically low crime rates have crept upward as a result, by the way, I would add, of conservative economic policies wiping out the middle class, have pushed police agencies, quote, to the breaking point, end quote. The statement, Kevin Johnson notes in USA Today, reflected the ongoing tension between the administration and many local police chiefs who believe the White House has saddled them with anti-terrorism tasks without much regard to cost. The group is also annoyed, he goes on to add, that President Bush is phasing out a $10 billion program begun by the Clinton administration in 1996 to help local departments hire tens of thousands more cops. So, you know, talk a good talk, but you got to walk the walk. And the Bush administration is not. I was surprised. Kerry pointed this out a few times. You know, that we're still not checking the cargo on our airplanes, that our ports are not secure, that 3 million people a year enter this country illegally, most of them from Mexico. Heard an amazing statistic last night on Lou Dobbs. 1 out of every 10 Mexican citizens lives in the United States. Chew on that one for a minute. Because Mexico is not a small country. Anyhow, they're kind of ignoring this stuff. Someday, we'll get it all figured out.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
And we'll get it straightened out.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242. Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 3,800 workers for United Parcel Servicing Canada went on strike yesterday. Represented by the Teamsters, the workers are protesting the newest contract offer from the U.S.-based package delivery service. The strike does not directly affect deliveries and shipping within the United States. In addition, the Independent Pilots Association has announced it will not cross any primary picket lines and issued a statement on Monday saying they will not fly into or out of Canada as long as the Teamsters are on strike. IPA represents close to 2,500 pilots who fly for UPS. The union has been in negotiations with UPS for 5 months.
The anti-choice federal refusal clause has passed without taking the issue to a full vote of the Senate. The provision allows the owners of HMOs, insurance companies, and for-profit hospitals the right to gag physicians from talking about abortions.
It also allows entities which receive federal funds to refuse to make referrals or to give women information on what their legal rights are. And it's called the non-discrimination bill, but it really discriminates against women.
Suzanne Martinez, Vice President for Public Policy for Planned Parenthood. She says this is a thinly veiled Republican attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade. The amendment contains no provisions for rape, incest, or the health of a woman seeking treatment. Robert Roos, President of Medical Students for Choice, says under the legislation, a hospital could theoretically bar him from treating a deathly ill woman, which he says is an unacceptable restriction.
As a future physician, it is important for me to be able to present all of the options to my patient.
Senator Boxer has demanded an April 1st vote on a bill that would repeal this provision.
Pizza delivery is consistently ranked amongst the most dangerous jobs in the country, and the drivers have begun demanding some respect. A pizza delivery drivers union, organized more than 2 years ago, has recently attracted the attention of the Teamsters. Last week, the pizza union had their first vote to organize a Domino's in Lincoln, Nebraska. Although the vote failed 2-2, organizers are calling the vote itself a triumph and are looking forward to a vote this week at a Pizza Hut in Columbus, Ohio. The union seeks to help drivers demand better fuel reimbursement, compensation for commercial driver's insurance, and better training of drivers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to infant mortality and life expectancy, it definitely is not better living in the USA. Of the top 20 industrialized nations, the U.S. ranks 21st in infant mortality and 16th in average life expectancy. That's despite the fact that the U.S. spends 40% more per capita on health care than any other country on Earth. Of the top 10 industrial nations, Americans are the least satisfied with their health care system, while Canadians are the most satisfied, according to public polls.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
I've been chastised by Walmart. The largest corporation in the world apparently was stung by one of my recent commentaries. I'd pointed out that Walmart, which touts itself as a model of free market success, actually has built its market muscle in large part by milking us taxpayers, having squeezed more than $1 billion in subsidies from state and local governments, giving it a competitive advantage to clobber local businesses. In response, Sarah Clark, Director of Corporate Communications at Wally World, fired off a missive to media outlets that carried my Walmart commentary. She asserted that it was, quote, full of inaccuracies. Was the key figure of $1 billion in taxpayer giveaways to Walmart inaccurate? No, she did not dispute it. Rather, Walmart's chief PR flack tried to change the subject, offering numbers purporting to show that the company is a generous corporate citizen. In the past 10 years, Ms. Clark informs us, Walmart has paid $4 billion in property taxes alone. But wait, it owed those taxes. This was not a contribution, but a debt. Other businesses pay property taxes, too, yet they don't get $1 billion in special subsidies. Then Ms. Clark notes that her company, quote, generated $52 billion in sales taxes. But wait again, that's not Walmart's money. It's money that local consumers paid to finance public services. This money is also the result of sales that the monopolistic giant took from local businesses. Walmart doesn't expand a community's buying power. It just redistributes purchases from other stores to itself. But Ms. Clark presses on, claiming that Walmart has remitted $192 million in wage taxes. Once more, however, this money is not a voluntary contribution from a good-hearted company. It's taken out of the employees' wages, as required by law. This is Jim Hightower saying, to see the full report about how Walmart does indeed milk taxpayers, go to goodjobsfirst.org.
College loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the holiday taste of Sam's Club this weekend. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Interesting conversation in the chat room. Is the Catholic Church a cult? We'll take that on some other time, on the air. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, a website, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into the chat room, just click live chat. It'll get you in there. And pleased to have you back with us. Alice in Humboldt County, California is on the line. Hey, Alice, how are you today?
Well, it's beautiful out, so I have to feel good.
That's wonderful. So what's...
Yeah. Well, I'm a retired nurse, and I've seen a lot of things happen in this country, but nothing like the last two elections. I'm just amazed at people. They seem to be so out of it.
Yeah.
And I feel that if they would read The Inside Job, it isn't published in the regular bookstore, but you can call 1-800-536-727. In it, there was a story about boys looking at the tower in New York.
Yeah.
And they...
Alice, there is no shortage of books. I mean, that's one of many.
But to me, it's the best one.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I've read a lot of them.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you for that information. I appreciate it, Alice, and it's good to hear from you. Thank you for the call. A New Pearl Harbor is the other big one, and that's actually in bookstores right now. But there's a number of these that are categorized by and large as kind of conspiracy books or whatever that raise some interesting questions, some questions that I think need to be answered. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. You?
Great. What's up?
And you'll get better, I know.
There you go, yeah.
Well, you know me, I'm the part of the crazy left. I'm a yippie from way back, so I like to do stuff.
Yeah.
Here's my question to you and your listeners. I need some help in this. I'm going to be burning a flag wrapped around a Bible.
Oh, my.
To make the point that, we are becoming that the Constitution has been shredded, that giving the money to churches and then demanding their roster, these things have to stop.
Yeah, then why not burn a dollar bill wrapped in the in a replica of the Constitution or something? If you want.
Hey, that sounds good, too. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for ideas that are going to really get people angry and motivated to realize there is a choice. We don't have to let the crazy religious people take over. So my question is this: where and when?
Well, there's a larger question, Billy, and that is if you were a yippie, you know that the brilliance of the political theater that the yippies engaged in back in the 60s was in that, by and large, it was inoffensive. It didn't really anger people. It caused them to go, oh, that's interesting. I mean, there were these non sequiturs. There were ironies embedded in that political theater of the yippies, but it wasn't designed to really foster anger and upset on the other side.
I think
you're violating the principles of the yippies.
Yes, I am, and I do that willingly and knowingly,
I don't think it's a strategy that works. I think that what'll happen is you'll just further polarize the country.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah, well,
yeah. The idea is not to let them do all the polarizing. The idea is to let the people who need to find. See, here's the problem: atheists. We don't gather in meetings. We don't have leaders telling us how to vote and how to think and where to go and how to act.
Actually, there is the atheist society. You know, Madeline Murray O'Hare used to have this bunch. I mean, okay.
So the idea is that we don't know where to go. All we know is that the Christians have taken over, and that they now, as they like to say, the cuffs are off Bush now that he's reelected. They have expectations.
See, Billy, you're buying into a huge myth. I'm telling you, the mainstream Christian denominations in the United States, the Methodist Church, the Episcopalians, the Congregationalists.
The Southern Baptists.
No. By and large, the mainstream denominations in the United States are not, cults that have gone off the edge and who are, trying to alter our textbooks and get rid of evolutionaries. It is a fringe element of Christianity.
The mainstream isn't the one who's acting today. The mainstream has let the radicals take the stage. Someone has to push those people off the stage.
And they have
to get out of the public square.
And the way you do that is by waking people up. The way that we ended slavery was by pointing out the evil of it.
You know who Gurdjieff is, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay. And my suggestion to you is that Gurdjieff had it right, that people walk around in what I call consensual trance.
Yeah.
And you have to wake them up. And let me tell you something.
I'm agreeing with you, Billy. I'm absolutely...
consensual trance by doing what somebody did yesterday.
No, but you also drive them deeper into their trance if you reinforce their stereotypes of you.
You know what? Anything is better than the status quo today. As soon as you have a better idea, a more powerful idea, I'll give up mine.
My point, Billy, is that by acting out the stereotype, you're acting out their vision of you. And
exactly.
So what
I'm willing to do that.
But you're further convincing them that they're right.
You're anchoring the status quo. You're making the status quo more solid, not less solid.
Yes, but when they think I'm right, what they're going to do is then move against me, and that might radicalize the sleepy middle.
No, see that's the logic that.
I'm afraid to do that. You know,
that's the logic that the Bolsheviks were using. I mean, that's the logic. That I'm forgetting the guy's name. The guy who started Islamic Jihad was using when they murdered Sadat in Egypt because they thought that it would cause the people to rise up. When they tried to take over Algeria,
Over Algeria. Let me see how they did it. Let's see. They decided to have an election, and then once the Party of God won, they said, well, the Party of God's in control. We don't need any more elections. And isn't that the permanent Republican majority being created today by the Christians and the president?
No, and what happened in Algeria was that the people pushed back. The governments cracked down on these folks and started arresting them and pushing them back.
After they had war in the streets, that people were dying like crazy in Algeria.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm saying, let's not go there. Why do you want to provoke that?
You know what? Here's why I want to provoke anything other than the direction we're moving in today. Do you consider the direction we're going in a good one?
No, I don't.
How do you turn it around?
By waking people up and providing a pot. If you want to do theater, go back to the ideals of the Yippies, the Yip Quote.
And we lost the election. Let's try it my way.
It's not a 1-year process.
Yeah, you're right.
It's not a 1-year process. It's an all through your life process. You know, waking people up, sharing information, holding a vision. This is something that conservatives have been working on with billions of dollars, day by day, steadily, with hundreds of talk shows all across the country and newspapers and getting down on journalists and whatnot. For 30 years, ever since Scaife and Coors and those guys got together back in the early 70s after Goldwater's defeat and said we're going to change America and make it safe for rich people again, and first funded the first think tank, the Heritage Foundation, and went on from there, and that's how you do it.
Well, here's my question to you again. It's not whether or not I should do this, and I'll consider that, but where? Where should it be done in the Santa Cruz City Hall? Should I go to the local church, the local evangelical church?
Well, here's if you're doing it because it makes you feel good, do it in your living room. Because I'm telling you, that kind of stuff. I mean, going out and burning Bibles and flags and things is not useful street theater. It's not
let me
useful
tell you,
street
tell
theater.
Tell me what is useful. Is it useful to actually let them ban flag burning constitutionally?
No, of course
open
not.
Open up the Constitution to deny homosexuals their rights? Something different has to be done.
Billy, do you remember the story of Uncle Remus story of Brer Rabbit and the Tar Baby?
You bet I do.
Okay, you know that the those things that you kick against are the things that you get stuck to. If you want them to have flag burning as an issue, you can give it to them.
I do. I want them.
Why not something more appropriate? Why not a living wage?
Because they won't talk about the living wage.
That's my point. Here's your challenge, Billy. Your challenge is to come up with street theater that will raise the real issues. The fact that people don't have enough income in the United States. The fact that people don't have health care in the United States. The fact that people are dying because they don't have access to these things.
Back to reality. Is the Senate going to vote on health care? Is the Senate going to vote on a real living wage? No, but they dying to vote on banning the flag, aren't they?
Exactly, and that's why I'm saying don't feed that. If you're going to do political theater, and I think that's absolutely wonderful, Billy, and I salute you for doing political theater, go back to your yuppie roots and come up with this. Here's your assignment. You're a creative guy.
No, it's your assignment. I got my idea. You come up with a better one.
I'm not the street theater guy. I'll think about it. But
you've got an entire audience. I'll take the idea from anybody at all.
Okay. Positive, but I think that what we need to be doing is, instead of taking their issues and reacting to them, we need to define our issues and say, okay, here's the street theater around this. For example, if you were to get together about 100 babies, get families who have brand new babies, yet less than a year old babies, and have them show up in Congress and present each one with a bill for $37,000, which is the amount of debt that George Bush has run up in the last 3 years that the babies being born today are being born with. There's a birth tax. It's called George Bush's tax cuts. He cut taxes on the rich. He borrowed that money from babies.
Sure,
so why not show up with 100 babies at City Hall?
Here's the reality. The fact is that these marriage people, these crazy pro-marriage people, now that they've gotten as far as they've gotten, they're saying, you know what? Even divorce is a bad idea. We're not just against homosexuals.
We don't want
easy divorce. And one more thing. Yeah. They also don't want purposeful childlessness.
Yes, I know, and there's a subtext of there's a subtext of racism to that as well. I mean, there are people who I've
White people to have more babies.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's the bottom line. They're concerned about the fact that people who have a little pigment in their skin are having too many babies. And well, you know, there's a very bizarre agenda here. Billy, we got to wrap this up.
Okay,
we're turning this thing into half the show. But you know, I appreciate it, and please consider some positive street theater and call us back and let us know.
As soon as you have a more powerful idea than mine, I will take it up.
Well, the baby one is a good start.
That's impossible. I don't know how to do that.
Well,
I can't do that.
All you do is you put an ad in the paper saying wanted liberal mothers who are willing to bring their babies to a street theater event.
Where do you find them?
Cost you $35 to put a help wanted ad in the paper,
whatever.
I mean, it's a starting point.
And where, by the way? Where do you do it? Do you do it in...
Start out in Santa Cruz and
no, I meant
invite
specifically
you.
Where and what day when is
the
best?
Okay. Well, those are questions I'm going to leave to you, Billy. We got to wrap it up and move along. I'm sorry, thank you for your call. It's always great talking with you. Next time you print something out from a color printer, a color laser printer, take an LED flashlight. You know these little flashlights like on key rings. They actually have a light emitting diode in them rather than a bulb, so they produce actually a blue light, and shine it on that paper that you just ran on a copy machine. You go into one of these copy shops and you make a copy of something, shine it on there, and you will see about every inch down the page a number printed in very faint yellow type. It tracks it back to you. Did you know this? That any copy you make now, the government can figure out who made that copy and when and where. The printer companies, several printer companies, this is from the Metal News Service, several printing companies quietly encode the serial number and manufacturing code of their color laser printers and color copiers on every document those machines produced. Governments, including the United States, already use the hidden markings to track counterfeiters and maybe you. You pay for it with a credit card, they know who you are. Isn't this an amazing... 1984, welcome. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own.
Let go. I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Research. Look, a rabbit with wings. We do research. And the lemon that sings. So much research. There are so many things you can modify in nature markets.
Oh my, you can modify a nature. 24 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brian in New Jersey on the line. Hey, Brian, what's
hey,
on your
Tom,
mind today?
You were just talking about the laser printer and how they're tracking us through that.
Yeah.
I sent you a link earlier about smart dust, and if your listeners want to go on Infowars.com, they can look up smart dust and find it. But basically what it is, it's the world is, the world's smallest wireless sensor, and smaller than a penny. You spread them about 250 feet apart. They create this little wireless network. And they were originally intended for military purposes of tracking troops and gunfire, and now they're actually the national ID card that they're trying to give to every American, which has the RFID chip. They work with that.
So interesting. These are passive or active?
What do you mean by that?
I mean, do they, like for example, when you walk out of a store, if you tried to shoplift something, walk out of a store, and you know, pass those sensors, and they notice the little tag in the garment, that is passive. It doesn't have anything. It doesn't have any power source, and so it gets essentially noticed or activated by somebody beaming a signal at it. On the other hand, something active would be something that has a battery in it that's pinging out a signal all the time, like the LoJack things.
I believe it has a battery.
Hmm.
But I'm not 100% sure on that. I couldn't find anything in the article about that. But
yeah.
All I do know is that advertisers want to use this.
Oh yeah.
So that you know they can track exactly what we're buying.
What was the movie? Wasn't it it was a Tom Cruise movie?
Minority Report.
Yeah, Minority Report.
Yeah, in the link that I sent you, they make a reference exactly to that.
Yeah.
As in Minority Report, they do a retinal scan. Well, this would be much easier because
yeah.
they want to put the RFID chips, you know, in us with VeriChips. You can go to VeriChip.com and check that out.
Yeah.
And hopefully this doesn't happen, but it's looking
well.
Like
They're actually putting them in people right now. They're selling it as protect your kid from the kidnappers kind of thing. But
yeah, I can't believe the media is playing it up like it's the good thing to do. You know, 5 or 6 years ago, you'd be labeled as a conspiracy theorist, and now 60 Minutes has reports. Oh well, this celebrity got it, and this guy.
I know. You know what surprises me is that the very very kind of paranoid fringe of the conservative Christian movement has not gotten into this to say, hey, this is the mark of the beast that was prophesied in Revelation that you must have in order to engage in commerce. You know, it's a maybe it is. Who knows? Brian, thanks for the information.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking to you. 26 minutes after the hour, 1-866-889-8894. A telephone number, Jim in Ashland, Oregon, one of the great town. Two good friends of mine live there, Jim, Neil Walsh and Gene Houston. It's just a beautiful place.
Really, really?
You live in a great town.
It is a beautiful place, and I'm calling in reaction to the street theater guy.
Yeah, Billy.
And, yeah, and it, in a way, I mean, I can sympathize with his point of view, but He's kind of scary, too.
Billy, and, Billy's a good guy.
Yeah, I think he is a good guy, but I think he's got it wrong. I think we really need to get back to basics and build from the base up and not be looking at these just these mass kind of, I guess, antagonizing or theater that sort of engages people towards a violent solution.
Yeah. Well, that was my point. I think that, number one, we need to define our issues that we want to be on the table,
right,
rather than reacting to their issues, number one.
Right.
Number two, we have to come up with a provocative street theater that does not push away the other side, in fact, that can cause them to embrace our ideas.
Right. I'm thinking along the lines of those people who have lost their health care, those people who have lost their jobs, rallies that engage those folks, and,
right,
and so that they're visible. Let's take what
yeah,
has
and not
in,
just visible. Give you know, put a little edge to it. Have those
right,
people who have lost their health care all show up with you know, those bottles that you walk down the
right,
hall in the hospital with, you know,
right,
with the feeding tubes. Get a whole bunch of those. You know, just phony. Just
yeah,
glue them to, or you know, tape them to your arm and have them all walking down the street. So there's a little theatrical element to it.
Maybe,
so it gets into the news.
Maybe with a bill hanging around their neck or something.
Yeah, right.
My,
yeah,
my point is, make them visible, but let's do it in a way where people can recognize that this is a problem, not in a way where people are threatened and believe that they're just about to engage in some sort of cultural war.
Good point, Jim. Good point. I absolutely agree. Thanks for the call. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight at 10, 9 Central on Bravo. Guess who's coming to dinner?
I'm very excited about this ingredient. Bourbon.
Yeah! It's the all-new Queer Eye for the Straight Guy Thanksgiving Special. The Fab Five track down their favorite straight guys.
Happy holidays.
To see who's still made over and who's a mess.
Oh, my God!
You guys freaked Carson out, which is not easy to do.
Oh, and it wouldn't be Thanksgiving without a little Fab Five football.
This will end in tears.
The all-new Queer Eye Thanksgiving Special, tonight at 10, 9 Central, only on Bravo.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Nearly 3,800 workers for United Parcel Service in Canada went on strike yesterday. Represented by the Teamsters, the workers are protesting the newest contract offer from the U.S.-based package delivery service. The strike does not directly affect deliveries and shipping within the United States. In addition, the Independent Pilots Association has announced it will not cross any primary picket lines and issued a statement on Monday saying they will not fly into or out of Canada as long as the Teamsters are on strike. IPA represents close to 2,500 pilots who fly for UPS. The union has been in negotiations with UPS for 5 months.
The anti-choice federal refusal clause has passed without taking the issue to a full vote of the Senate. The provision allows the owners of HMOs, insurance companies, and for-profit hospitals the right to gag physicians from talking about abortions.
It also allows entities which receive federal funds to refuse to make referrals or to give women information on what their legal rights are. And it's called the non-discrimination bill, but it really discriminates against women.
Suzanne Martinez, Vice President for Public Policy for Planned Parenthood. She says this is a thinly veiled Republican attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade. The amendment contains no provisions for rape, incest, or the health of a woman seeking treatment. Robert Roos, President of Medical Students for Choice, says under the legislation, a hospital could theoretically bar him from treating a deathly ill woman, which he says is an unacceptable restriction.
As a future physician, it is important for me to be able to present all of the options to my patient.
Senator Boxer has demanded an April 1st vote on a bill that would repeal this provision.
Pizza delivery is consistently ranked amongst the most dangerous jobs in the country, and the drivers have begun demanding some respect. A pizza delivery drivers union, organized more than 2 years ago, has recently attracted the attention of the Teamsters. Last week, the pizza union had their first vote to organize a Domino's in Lincoln, Nebraska. Although the vote failed 2-2, organizers are calling the vote itself a triumph and are looking forward to a vote this week at a Pizza Hut in Columbus, Ohio. The union seeks to help drivers demand better fuel reimbursement, compensation for commercial driver's insurance, and better training of drivers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to infant mortality and life expectancy, it definitely is not better living in the USA. Of the top 20 industrialized nations, the U.S. ranks 21st in infant mortality and 16th in average life expectancy. That's despite the fact that the U.S. spends 40% more per capita on health care than any other country on Earth. Of the top 10 industrial nations, Americans are the least satisfied with their health care system, while Canadians are the most satisfied according to public polls.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Just because there's arsenic in the water.
Oh, it's just a little bit of arsenic.
And just because there's mercury in the air.
It's only enough to cause a little autism.
Just because the corporations run the White House.
Well, mostly.
Don't mean he don't care.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Paul Krugman in an interview with Pedro Nicolasi da Costa, published in Reuters, makes a startling prediction. Paul Krugman, of course, is the award-winning Princeton economics professor and author and New York Times columnist. He says the economic policies of Bush have set the country on a dangerous course, which will likely end in crisis. He goes on to say this is a group of people who don't believe that any of the rules really apply to them. They are utterly irresponsible. He goes on, he points out, and this is fascinating, this is something I didn't know. And I've been down, I've been to Argentina. I was down there two, maybe three years ago, the last time I was down in Argentina. And you know, they really, really went through a terrible time, that country. They're just slowly digging out of it now because basically their government ran their economy into the ditch. And they did it with the complicity of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and you know, the United States telling them how to do it. But that's what they did. And Krugman says if you go back and look at the sources of the blow-up of Argentine debt during the 1990s, one little appreciated thing is that Social Security privatization was an important source of that expansion of debt. See, Argentina pursued conservative economic politics, and it ran them right into a ditch. It blew up their economy. And Krugman is pointing out that, you know, we're going down the same road. This article, he says, so you ask the question, do we look like Argentina? The answer is a whole lot more than anyone is willing to admit at this point. We've become a banana republic. And I would add, because we have now reached the point, after 20-some-odd years of conservative economics, ever since Ronald Reagan first came in and declared war on the working, on organized labor and working people, we've seen a steady decline ever since then in real average wages, a dramatic, in fact, increase in wealth among the top 1% of Americans, but a steady decline in real wages among the working people of America, the middle class and the working poor and so on. And basically, ever since then, our exports have ceased to be finished manufactured goods. We're no longer exporting computers. We're no longer exporting clothing. Blue jeans, Levi's used to be the top brand in the world. Everybody wanted Levi's made in the United States. They don't even make them in the United States anymore. This in just 20 years, this radical shift. We're no longer making our own toys. We're no longer making our own clothes. We're no longer making our own machine tools. We're no longer making, our own computers. On and on and on the list goes, to the point where we can't have an effective military without parts that we bring in from outside the United States. In many cases, from China, a country that says that it may go to war with us over Taiwan. Pretty strange stuff, don't you think? Well, anyhow, here we are. So the crisis may take many forms, Krugman said, but one key concern is the prospect that Asian central banks, here we are back to China, may lose their appetite for U.S. government debt, which has so far allowed the United States to finance its twin deficits. Twin deficits, of course, being the trade deficit. We are buying from the world more than we are selling to the world. We are importing finished goods. And about the only thing that we're exporting anymore, just like a banana republic, about the only thing we're exporting anymore are raw materials. Grains, hides, trees, waste paper. Literally, we export waste paper to China, and we import from China cardboard boxes. Seriously. This is traditionally what happens in third world countries. This is a third world economy that Reaganomics has brought us. Yes, take down the barriers to trade. Make it possible for a country where the average today, from the average cost of living is $800 a year. Front page of today's Wall Street Journal, an article about how in China, the average cost of living over the last 15 years has gone up from, I don't have it right in front of me, as I recall from reading it this morning, from something like $600 a year to something like $900 a year. It's a pretty significant increase if you're Chinese. But if you're an American manufacturer hiring Chinese, it ain't bupkis. It still means that that labor is a lot cheaper than any labor here in the United States. We used to say, for over 200 years we said, if you want to manufacture jeans in the United States, if you want to manufacture jeans in China or in Malaysia, if say there's a dollar's worth of labor in a pair of jeans made in the United States, but if you make them in China, there's only 10 cents worth of labor, then when you import them into the United States, there's going to be a 90-cent tax. It's called a tariff. In fact, we so heavily relied on tariffs to protect our domestic industries that up until essentially the turn of the last century, up until around 1900, tariffs provided most of the revenue that operated our government. We didn't have an income tax until, 1913, 1916, right around then? And there were a few tax efforts, one in the 1880s, one in the 1860s, to help finance the Civil War. But basically, tariffs paid the load for our government, and the tariffs served a dual purpose. Not only did they do that, but they also caused people to say, I can make it here in the United States with a dollar's worth of labor, or I can make it in Malaysia with 10 cents worth of labor, but I'm going to have to pay a 90-cent tax when I bring it in anyway, so I might as well just make it here. And we kept our domestic industries. And people were actually able to get manufacturing jobs. And we made our own computers here in the 60s and the 70s. I mean, they were a little different, but we made them here. Even the early 80s, I remember one of the early Radio Shack computers that I had. Things, as I recall, they were made in Texas. The TRS-80 Model 1, remember? This is way back. I'm revealing my age, I guess. So anyhow, the cons came along and said, no. That might be good for the United States, but it's not good for the multinational corporations. And they're the ones that pay our bills, so they're the ones that we bow down to. They're the ones whose flag we salute. Tear down those trade barriers. Make it profitable for the multinational corporations. Who cares, they said, if a few Americans lose their jobs? There will be new jobs to replace them. They can work at McDonald's. They can work at Walmart. We'll go from being a manufacturing economy to being a retail economy. We'll stop making things. We'll start selling them. The problem is that there's an absolute limit to that. At some point, you hit the point where people don't have the money to buy it anymore because they're not making anything. And we are hitting that with the world in terms of our trade deficit. And, of course, the other deficit is the debt, United States debt, this train wreck that George W. Bush has given us. $500 billion this year. Over $8 trillion now. They just raised the debt ceiling. Over $8 trillion. And the only way that our government can continue to operate, the only way that we can pay for the war in Iraq, is by borrowing money in the name of our grandchildren, mostly from other countries. Well, not mostly, but a good chunk of it, a good solid third of it, coming from other countries. And a significant chunk of that, about a third of that more or less, coming from Southeast Asia. or South Asia, coming from China and Japan specifically, loaning us money, borrowing, you know, buying our debt. And so Krugman says the break can come either from the Reserve Bank of China deciding it has enough dollars, thank you, or from private investors saying, I'm going to take a speculative bet on a dollar plunge, which ends up being a self-fulfilling prophecy. Both scenarios are pretty unnerving. Absolutely. I encourage you to check out the editorial in today's Wall Street Journal. For the first time ever in my recollection, they're actually taking these issues on and telling the truth about this. Not that they don't normally tell the truth, but just specifically about this kind of an issue, taking on Alan Greenspan and George W. Bush. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line. Ellen, our report from Washington, D.C. Hey.
Well, a couple interesting things. One is that people are doing sort of Monday morning quarterbacking and taking a look at the election, particularly with Kerry.
Yeah.
And a lot of women, married women, et cetera, are now pretty much saying that the entire reason that they voted for Kerry, for Bush, was based on the security issue, that somehow Kerry did not make the case that they would be more secure. These are sort of midline voters in swing states.
Yeah, now this is really an example of how irrationality trumped rationality, Ellen. You get somebody in a town of 20,000 people in central Illinois, and their primary worry is terrorism, when over 500,000 Americans this year will die of cancer. Over 50,000 Americans will die because of drunk drivers. And 3,000 Americans have died because of terrorists. It's
or young children dying because of hunger.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have any people dying because of hunger, but we do have malnutrition and those kinds of issues.
13 million people in the United States had food insecurity last year.
Right.
I mean, so what I have to say, you know, I think that what this highlights is that the Democrats just did an absolutely incompetent job of communicating their message. If people bought this stuff,
and they paid no attention to their talk media.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple other interesting things. Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid sent a letter to Bush yesterday that said that they would like him to include in his budget the actual costs of Social Security, and the White House Budget Office is saying that the costs aren't going to be spelled out until the White House actually settles on any specific plan, which, as you know, could be a long time away. And this includes that what would cost the transition cost if you take 2% of everybody who's now in Social Security's budget out to allow them to invest privately.
Yeah. Well, they're walking on eggshells here. I mean, there's two good pieces on the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal today about that. And I think it was Alan Murray's column, and I'm not sure who was the columnist this week, but that regular kind of inside the Beltway column or whatever it is in the Wall Street Journal talking about, come on, guys, this is a fantasy if you think you're going to pull this off with debt. Paul Krugman talking today about how this is what Argentina did and drove them into over the edge. You know, I've got to get back to that security thing. I am just amazed. Ellen, how can it be that Condi Rice was given responsibility for the security of the United States? She was National Security Advisor, and she had over 100 meetings about the security of the United States between January when the Bush administration came into office and 9/11, and only two of those meetings dealt with terrorism at all. At all. Did the subject even come up at only two of those meetings? Yet Sandy Berger, I think maybe you were there, it was at the Center for American Progress meeting last year. Sandy Berger sat with a group of us from the press and said, you know, he was, of course, the national security advisor under Clinton, and said, you know,
right.
when Condi Rice, when I was debriefing Condi Rice, I told her top priority has to be bin Laden and terrorism. And we know that Gore told that to Dick Cheney. We know that Bush was told that by Clinton. Bush puts Cheney in charge of the anti-terrorism task force, and it never once meets until 9/11. And yet these guys are running around saying they're going to keep us safe. They dropped the ball. How come the Democrats didn't point that out?
Well, I have no idea. But the problem, I mean, they could have pointed it out all they want. Question is, did Senator Kerry, was he somebody that they trusted, somebody that they could make the case with? And that's really the issue.
So you think it's a defective candidate as well as defective message?
I do. Yeah. I really do. I think that, you know, I do what I call my makeup artist focus group, and these are all what we call the security moms, and they just said, I just don't feel comfortable.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it was when I talked to some of those that I knew the West was not won, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really.
But now they're doing the focus groups to show, and they said that, you know, this gay issue didn't have the issue; it was totally security.
Yeah, and religion wasn't that much of an issue. I thought that was interesting. That and the other thing, the other study that I saw showed that the swing that produced the extra 2% to push Bush over the top, assuming that he actually was pushed over the top by something other than electronic voting machines,
right,
was apparently people who earn over $100,000 a year. That was the only group that they could demonstrate actually turned up in larger numbers and voted for Bush in larger numbers than they had 4 years earlier. Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
Yeah, and what amazes me is that that hasn't gotten more publicity. I mean, there's a bunch of economists talking about this. There's statisticians talking about it. I should write up something for Common Dreams about that.
Yeah, you should. That's the kind of. But I think that it is interesting now that they are talking about moving their message to the middle, but really trying to get the security moms in involved.
Yeah, but the first thing that Bush did once he accepted his victory was he said, and now we're going to lower taxes. And we're going to privatize Social Security, and which are or he said fixed taxes, which is code, for we're going to reduce the taxes on the wealthy, we're going to get rid of the tax on capital gains, we're going to get rid of the tax on dividends, things like that, throw all the taxes on the backs of working people. In other words, he was speaking to those people who earn over $100,000 a year and saying to them, I'm going to pay you back.
Right.
And his agenda has been entirely economic in that regard, and it seems to be flying completely under the radar of the press.
Well, it's also interesting that some other notes going on here in terms of DNC chair. Governor Vilsack of Iowa is pulling out his name. Alexis Herman is not going to be. And Howard Dean and Vilsack were the top
vote-getters,
but we'll see what happens.
Do you think it's going to be Dean?
I think there's a good chance.
I think the Dean could re-energize the Democratic Party. I mean,
I do too.
He was my governor here for I don't know how many years, 8 to 10 years, something like that, here in Vermont. And he's a good man. He's a good man. And he's actually, when he was governor here, he was kind of a Rockefeller Republican type. Very,
right.
Very cautious, very stable, very straightforward.
Exactly. And everybody thinks he's this big liberal. He's not at all.
No, he's a big moderate. But I think he's one that a lot of liberals can support. So we'll see.
Right.
I think he could save the party. Hopefully. Okay,
we'll
Ellen.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Yep. Thanks for the report. Do appreciate it. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds. An antifungal salve, safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections. And a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting the squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost 500,000 workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
Since 1982, the Teamsters Pension Fund has been managed by Wall Street firms like Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan, companies who've shifted investments away from long-term bonds to stocks which generate fees. Similarly, President Bush and many Republicans want to shift Social Security investments away from a protected public trust into private savings accounts.
Once they privatize Social Security, we would have the return of massive old age poverty.
Again, Kenneth Kenpath.
We're not all going to become millionaires playing the stock market with an IRA, just as we won't all be rich if we bargain individually with corporations instead of having unions.
Kenpath says the union movement must unite under the threat of a corporate-styled Bush administration.
There is a general trend to privatize, individualize, to break down solidarity within our society. Solidarity in the labor movement doesn't just mean on the picket line. It means in our pension plans and our health plans, that we care about the retirees, that we care about each other, that the higher paid workers have to fight for the lower paid workers or they're going to become lower paid workers.
For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Don't stand by while democracy dies. Don't stand by. Don't swallow their lies. Don't stand by.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin.
Hey, well, your show today was extremely educational.
Well, thank you.
And I really appreciate your teaching and your abilities.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
I was just going to comment, you know, I think of this time to time because I think some of us, myself included, can see the slow incremental change of the culture of this country economically and culturally to a third world status.
Yeah.
And what I was going to ask you, did you ever notice, I'm sure you did, it's kind of a stupid question for you, but third world countries, they seem to be, the way a lot of us judge it, you know, not nearly as clean, orderly, organized, the people, the whole thing kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you what you thought the reason was behind that, and I'll tell you what my opinion is, and then I'll hang up and let me tell you yours. I just think that a lot of people realize in third world countries that there's just not a lot of hope because the power structure is totally corrupt.
I can tell you, Armin, that's not it, because I have lived and worked in third world countries, and there's a lot of hope in third world countries. It's just that there's not a lot of wealth. I mean, it's just the bottom line. The natural resources are not as available. The opportunity, the business opportunities aren't as available. And in most cases, they have dysfunctional political systems. And that's usually the biggest problem. Raymond in Cement City, but thanks for your call, Armin. I appreciate it. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan on the line. Hey, Raymond, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Tom. Well, I'm trying to follow up maybe on the end of your interview there. A couple minutes ago, at a point I wanted to go back to, is we need to remember next time we go for a presidential candidate, is not only is the person qualified and do they have the right values, but the electability. And I worked on the Clark campaign, and that was one of the main themes that we recognized and we were pushing. And two things about that is that, one, I think he had the right strategy that you had to hold Bush accountable for the security issue. And
he was the only guy, really, who was pointing out that Bush dropped the ball in the first 9 months he was president and allowed 9/11 to happen here in the United States.
And that's the only way that he said you could win this election.
Yeah, and he was absolutely right. I absolutely agree with you, Raymond. Thanks for the call. Do appreciate it. I'm sorry we're out of time. It's the end of the day. Another great day slides by. We'll see you again here tomorrow. We'll be here on Thursday, by the way, with some pilgrims, believe it or not. Thanks to Louise for producing our program, to Ira for engineering it today, to the folks in our chat room for showing up, to Shelby at radiopower.org for streaming us around the planet, Ben for our Archives of White Rose, and Mike Toth for our Archives of TomHartman.com. Thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place. Do good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Tom Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.